It's Friday!
Okay, Tokyo, South America, Australia, France, Germany, UK, Africa.
Here we go. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And here it is, the final Friday on the front porch for the Horn for 2018. This is the Horn. HeadOn.live is where we live. And yeah, this is the 28th day of December 2018. And yet it may even, I don't know. Okay, program note, it may actually be the final program of 2018 if I can scrounge up enough wherewithal to to take Agnes out on New Year's Eve, which is Monday. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. We will get going with the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable, in about 58 minutes or so. A reminder to those who might like to participate. If you want to, send a contact request on Skype, that's on Skype, to Sparky Dunk, SparkyDunc, Sparky Dunk, one word, and Sparky will show you the breadcrumb trail to the old hollow tree we rent out from the Keebler Elves, where we keep the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable, around which we gather on Fridays and occasionally on other days of the week, but particularly on Fridays. Yeah, let's see. This being the beginning of the program, we have some thanks to send out. Oh, wait, I'm also, there we go. Good. The stress line is also ready for your call, I think. I don't know. Turns out the cat walked across the mix desk a few days ago. It may have screwed up the stress line. I need to check that this weekend. But at any rate, the stress line is connected and ready to go as well. That number, of course, 844-THE-HORN, 844-843-4676. But in the main, if you want to participate in Friday on the Front Porch, the best way to do it is via Skype, as previously mentioned. And we'll get it going here, by about the beginning of the next hour or so. It being the beginning of the program, we have thanks to send out. We have no more subscribers for the remainder of the month, no subscribers on the 29th, no subscribers on the 30th or the 31st, because everything gets screwed up by February, so it all ends on the 28th, subscriber-wise. And so we send our thanks out to the 28th of the month subscribers. Thank you to Charlene. Thank you so very much, Charlene. Thank you to Philip. Much obliged, Philip. Thank you very kindly. To Randy in PA. Thank you, Randy. Thank you to Sharon. Thanks so much, Sharon. Thank you to Harold. Harold being the president and CEO of Sochtris, the secret open carry Happy Trails Roundup Society. Thank you, Harold. And thanks to Smitty in Florida. Smitty in Florida, where my Mountaineers are also at the moment playing the Syracuse University in the Camping World Bowl in Orlando. Yeah. I know. Our Heisman wannabe quarterback who decided to lay out of the game isn't there, but shucks. I couldn't help. I had to tune in. And so far, it's proving to be not exactly a barn burner. I confess I may periodically just peep over and check. And yeah, Syracuse is up 7-3. And, oh, well, what can I say? I can't help myself. I'm a fan. But thanks to all of our subscribers, and thank you very kindly to Otto Deschott for jumping in as well. Thank you all so very much. And like I said, program note, might not be here Monday night, New Year's Eve, because, you know, so many people... A lot of people, you know, it's not so much on Christmas Eve, and by Christmas night, people are kind of tired. But a lot of people go out and about and do things on New Year's Eve. I don't know. Is there even any, and there's another, this is so weird. The subscriptions just come in bizarrely. Now, thanks to however it is PayPal does it. Thank you very kindly to Angel as well for that help subscription-wise for the 28th of the month. Thank you very much indeed. So anyway, give me your thoughts. If you want a New Year's Eve program, if you don't want a New Year's Eve program, I mean, it's not like we're going to be on the air at midnight and do the countdown or anything like that. And I guess by 6 p.m. when we come on the air, it'll already be New Year's in the other side of the world, sort of. Yeah, well, But anyway, let me know. And we'll plan accordingly. I hope by, say, tomorrow... to be putting a brisket into the brine and the secret herbs and spices and brine that thing up for New Year's Day, corned beef and cabbage. Well, I tell you what a difference a year makes. This time, not this time last year, but New Year's Day of last year, it was 11 below zero. We're looking for a New Year's Day high for 2019, of cloudy and 51. That's just mind-blowing. Welcome to climate chaos, I guess. Welcome to planet chaos. But we've got all kinds of things to talk about this evening, and we'll save a lot of it for... once we gather the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable participants together. Thank you very kindly to Brother Deacon Asa, loud and clear from the front porch. As we bid farewell to the year of our Lord 2018, I think Asa says that with tongue in cheek, and look through our rose-colored sea and eyeglasses toward a saner 2019, please consider this. You may recall the story I brought to our attention couple of weeks ago about the most popular person on YouTube, PewDiePie or PewDiePie, P-E-W-D-I-E-P-I-E. I have no idea what this person does. I've never seen any of his YouTube videos. I really have no desire to. But he had, consider this as we look forward into 2019. As Asa points out, when YouTube's most viewed star, PewDiePie, endorsed a Nazi propaganda channel on December 10th of this year, he had 72 million subscribers. Today, a mere 3 weeks later, he has 6 million more subscribers for a total of 78 million, far outpacing his own subscriber acquisition record. Have a happy, rosy 2019, says Brother Deacon Asa. Yeah, that's what I was guessing. Rhymes with cutie pie, Asa tells me. PewDiePie. Not Pew, Le Pew. Pepe Le Pew is my name. Right. That's how I remember it. And, you know, all indicators point to at least the beginning of 2019 being pretty much a seamless carryover from the end of 2018, including the shutdown of the United States government, which appears, at least to the nominal president of the United States, you know, Julius Geiser, to be not a big deal. He continues to tweet madly away, or the Spyro Keats tweet, or whatever, that he's happy to keep the government shut down. And Mick Mulvaney, who prior to entering this White House was just another wild-eyed, blithering idiot member of the Freedom Caucus, the Freedom Caucus there in the House of Representatives, well, he said that probably not much going to go on until Nancy Pelosi becomes Speaker, and then asserted that she does not presently have votes to be Speaker. Well, I guess not insofar as the vote has not yet been taken. But I will be very, very surprised. If she's not elected Speaker. But that's, God almighty, that's a long way away. That is Thursday, a week from yesterday, before that all takes place. So we shall see. So what do we have to just sort of trigger the discussion heading into the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable? Well, this. For starters, say his name. Felipe Alonso Gomez. That's the name of the little 8-year-old boy who died in American captivity on Christmas Day. Or perhaps shortly before Christmas Day. A timeline has come out of his final hours. It's difficult to talk about this because it's such a revolting chain of events that led to his needless demise. For purposes of review, let's recall that Felipe Alonso Gomez, although having a Hispanic name, comes from a fairly remote area of Guatemala, in which the people among whom he was born and raised are not even native speakers of Central American Spanish. He comes from the Chuj people, if I'm even pronouncing that right, and there's every chance in the world I'm not. But he comes from the Chuj people. They're indigenous. They have indigenous life ways, indigenous dress. And they have their own language, of which there are several tens of thousands of speakers. And in the company of other similarly situated people, he made his way north because Guatemala has become a cesspit of gang violence and drug violence and even extrajudicial killings by the local policia, the police. They occasionally find it necessary just to go out and kill somebody who needed a good killing, according to them. Well, here's the one thing we do know. And look, I was correct. Before we even had this stuff, before this stuff had been released, I was pointing out the truth of a couple of things. It is now being reported that Felipe Alonso Gomez died of flu. Just the flu. Lots of people get it. A number of people die of the flu. In any given year. people with compromised immune systems are particularly susceptible to the mortal effects of the flu. The young, the elderly. And I submitted that this young man came from a place of limited contact with certainly white Americans. Nenton in Huehuetenango Department of Guatemala is not yet exactly a tourist hotspot. But we know now that he died of flu. And if you look up the incubation period for flu, you'll find that it runs somewhere between the 1 day to 5 day range. Most often the incubation period for flu, it runs around 2 days and change. Now, he and his daddy, Felipe Alonso Gomez, say his name, and his daddy were taken into American captivity on the 18th day of December 2018. At that point in time, he was showing no signs, no symptoms of being anything other than perhaps a weary little 8-year-old boy. That's it. That's all. He's just a tired little guy. You'd be tired, too, if you'd just walked 2,000 miles. But he wasn't coughing, he wasn't sneezing, he wasn't sniffling. But by the 24th of December 2018, he was. And by the earliest hours of 25th December 2018, he was dead. He's just dead. So we can draw from that set of facts and circumstances a conclusion. Felipe Alonso Gomez didn't catch the flu in Guatemala. He didn't catch the flu from aid workers who, like him, probably had a considerable amount of indigenous DNA in their makeup. He didn't catch it from anyone in Mexico. Nope. Felipe Alonso Gomez caught the flu, most likely from some American. I might note that the greatest country in the history of the world on earth, now, today, forever, in the universe under God, doesn't have universal health care and does not have universal access to a flu vaccine. I would know because I haven't had one. If you have some sort of insurance, your flu vaccine comes with nothing out of your pocket. But if you are one of the millions of uninsured in this country, and in particular, given that this child entered the United States near El Paso, Texas, hey, what state has the highest number of uninsured people in the entire United States? Why, look, it's Texas. So that means that there are millions of Texans who probably are not getting flu shots because, well, if you wander into your local cut-rate pharmacy or Wally World or anywhere that has those signs that say, hey, we have flu shots, well, you're going to have to dig deep to pay for the flu shot. I know this to be factual. Because at one point in time, Agnes was saying, hey, Bob, You need to get your flu shot. Need to get your flu. I said, yes, I absolutely do. And as quick as I can afford it, I will. It is no less than 40 bones. And so it is reasonable to assume that, you know, because the flu is not transmitted by, I don't know, rocks in the desert. The flu is an airborne virus, and young Felipe Alonso Gomez had to catch it from someone. And he caught it from someone in the United States of America. Period. And there are any number of risk factors that indicate that he was at risk. Youth, arguable exhaustion, 2,000-mile walk is quite the accomplishment. So youth and exhaustion, and perhaps the fact that the circumstances of his origins. Oh, and by the way, on that timeline, we do still see that, hey, look, everybody, when he wasn't feeling too perky and they took him to the horse pistol, they did run a test. Yay. They ran a test for streptococcus bacteria. They swabbed his little throat and checked it, and no, it didn't grow any cultures, so he didn't have anything. He didn't have anything bacteriological. But you know what they did? They still gave him a prescription for an antibacterial drug, an antibiotic, amoxicillin. Kind of a broad spectrum affair. And it availed him not because, hey, guess what? Amoxicillin and practically all antibiotics are utterly, absolutely, totally, completely, and thoroughly useless against a virus. Any virus. Give the little kid these and call us if he's not up to his own self anytime. Get him out of here. Welcome to the healthcare system in the greatest country in the history of the world, on earth now, today, in the universe, forever under God, Merca. And oh, by the way, while we are considering the final days and hours of little Felipe, let us also consider that the United States Immigration Service is supposed to have medical monitoring at ports of entry to the United States. Okay? Because we're worried about them bringing their diseases into our clean, 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 pure, lily-white country. But even those protocols were not followed. Why? Because Felipe Alonso Gomez and his daddy did not enter the country at a border point of entry. Nope. They entered via the desert adjacent to it. Yeah. Because, of course, the port of entry has been strangled by Julius Geezer, his regime, and people like the not particularly concerned Kirstjen Nielsen, who, I will maintain, still needs to be standing in a dock in The Hague answering for crimes against humanity. Not that she ever will be, because, well, crimes against humanity are for other countries, not us, the U.S., the new United States, no. But for people like Tucker Carlson, who say that immigrants make America a dirtier place, that little fella didn't come here with the flu. He came here clean, clear-eyed, and with a sense of hope. And then, in this country, he got all dead. Note coming from Ron in Raleigh. Subject line, flu deaths. North Carolina has had 391 flu deaths so far this year. This year. This flu season. Or does that... No, it's just all year long. A country that calls itself civilized should probably be concerned about... I mean, that's one state. North Carolina is a big state as far as the east of the Mississippi and the South is concerned. I mean, you could fit the entire population of the state of West Virginia into the greater Charlotte-Mecklenburg metropolitan area. But 391. Irish Dave says, so when the poor huddled masses come here, we give them smallpox blankets or the white man's flu, asking for a friend. Well, Dave, tell your friend, yeah. The smallpox blankets are a little bit out of are out of fashion now, but, you know, if a border patrol agent, yeah, well, you know, he's not feeling so great, but, hey, he likes the OT, so he shows him, yeah, what's that, kid? Where's you? Oh, I'm sorry about that. Yeah, take the little take the little guy into captivity there. He's an illegal. Right. As Darlene in Connecticut puts it, what a terrible crying shame and a waste of a little human being. I will say that I typically get the flu shot fairly late when I go for my annual clinical visit for my FSH. This was exactly 2 weeks ago this year. Truth be told, just the shot is kicking my ass. I usually have no symptoms outside of a mildly sore arm, but since the shot, I've had major hot flashes several times a day over the past 2 weeks. It's like a sudden fever that roars up and then subsides in about 10 to 15 seconds. With any exertion or stress, I heat up. Being outside in the bitter cold is actually a relief when that happens. I can only imagine what actually having this year's flu strain is like, especially for a little boy whose immune system is still developing. Exactly, and when fully developed, Darlene, may not be anywhere near prepared or to cope with flu, because it may be considerably more rare where he comes from. Other things may not be, but the diseases attendant upon white so-called civilization might be a different story. Civilized, asks David in South Carolina, Stan. A civilized country could keep its government running. Let's
work.
Yeah, there's a jingle for David in South Carolina, Stan, because the fact of the matter is, I think I remember Robert in Australia mentioning something like this. In a parliamentary form of government, if something like what is happening now happened there, the government goes away. The government dissolves. And you got to get yourself a new government so somebody can get in there who knows actually what in the living hell they're doing. But not here. Not here. Nope, not here. So which strain of flu would that be, Irish Dave asks. Certainly not the Asian flu, and I've never even heard of the white Anglo flu, so maybe it was the Norwegian swine flu virus. You know, now we just give them names with a series of numbers and a couple of letters here and there, sort of like the number on the tail of an airplane. And even things like the Spanish flu of 1918 that proved to be of the damn near pandemic quality was actually not Spanish in origin. Nope, that was just right. Yeah, $40. Yeah, Anatole says at CVS it's a hair above $30. That's generally the range. Yeah. So I wanted to begin the conversation this evening talking about Felipe Alonso Gomez, because he deserves to have his name mentioned, and he deserves to be remembered as a sacrificial victim on the altar made entirely of ego at which Donald J. Trump worships. Right. So consideration should be given. Attention must be paid. Hey, there's Silent R. Lamar entering the chat room. Happy New Year, Silent R. Got a good group in the chat room this evening if you'd like to wander on by. We've got Anatole's in there. Dennis is in there. Silent R. Lamar. Little Thunder. Otto DeShot. Ralphs is there. Hey, Ralphs. And Squeaky's there, and Terry in Saigon has come by again. That's a great group. All capably moderated, of course, by longtime, inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, who, being a spacing guild master, has indeed folded space to become Man Cave, and also featuring moderation by pinch-hit midweek utility chat room moderator and all-around great guy, Steve from Georgistan. Fuck Carlson, says Alexander. He needs to stop talking trash about people of color and their diseases. Got a question. Who are the ones doing and taking all of the drugs, approved and non-approved, from animals, their family members, corpses, and same-sex humans, and imposing their diseases on everyone worldwide 365, 24/7? Last time I checked, that was, wait for it, white folks. Well, diseases develop all over the planet. And in a let's remember that the plague of the 14th century started in Asia, and by seaborne trading routes found its way to Venice, and then the game was really on. Flavio pointing out, yeah, the Spanish flu started in China. Scientists now know that epidemics travel from east to west on account of the close proximity of people and animals the farther east one goes. And, of course, it was the same with the plague. It started in Asia, made its way westward, and then wreaked havoc all over Europe. And, in fact, you can argue that it paved the way, that and the fall of Constantinople, for the rise of the so-called Renaissance. And that was just when the fastest mode of travel was either a running horse or a sailing ship. In the era of air travel, it can go twice as fast, 3, 5, 10 times, 100 times as fast. But you know who didn't bring disease to the United States? A little guy by the name of Felipe Alonso Gomez. What else? Well, this was actually something I meant to get to the other night. Because I find some would say, nobody knows who this guy is. I had no idea who PewDiePie was either, but the sucker apparently found a way to become more beloved of Nazis. And he is by far and away the most popular person on YouTube. I don't know who Josh Bernstein is or where he comes from. But he, about a week ago, he put up a video in which he, it wasn't even Christmas yet, so maybe it was part of the Festivus airing of grievances. And what a list of grievances he had on December the 20th. And it's not just that he has grievances. He wants to do something about his grievances. Here we go.
So here's the thing. Obama, Warner, Cardin, Corker, Abbasi, Duracoglo, Johnson, Comey, Mueller, Lynch, Obama, Clinton, Orr, Bruce Orr, Nellie Orr, Glenn Simpson, Christopher Steele, Rod Rosenstein, Andrew Weissman, I know I'm forgetting a few, they all should be charged, every single one of them should be charged with U.S. Code 182381, which is treason.
That's the U.S. Code citation, but you could also go to Article 3 of the Constitution, because that's where it began. But just saying. I mean, we can't expect too much intelligence or scholarship on the part of one of these freaks.
Their acts are treasonous. Their acts are seditious. They tried to overthrow the will of the people by planting fake evidence to overthrow a duly elected presidential elect for president.
No, they didn't. What he's doing is he's relying upon a bizarre booger-eater article that claims that James Clapper tried to use a Supreme Court justice to stop the inauguration of Donald J. Trump. You know, Donald J. Trump, who, of course, lost the popular vote, and who, incidentally, probably monkeyed around with or canoodled around. There was no canoodling. With foreign adversaries of the United States in order to be president. Yeah. But over there in the right-wing sewers of the internet, they put all kinds of, they just throw stuff out there to see if it'll stick. Okay. So he's got a list of people he's angry about. So what? Wing nuts are always angry. Well, this guy takes it a step further. It's not just that he's angry. He wants to do something about it.
That is high crimes and misdemeanors to the point of treason.
Interesting he would reference high crimes and misdemeanors, because high crimes and misdemeanors actually applies to the issue of what? Yes, impeachment, which applies to people who are actually in office, which Barack Obama isn't, James Clapper isn't, and civil servants don't have to be impeached. They can just be fired. But it doesn't matter because the people who pay attention to this this turd on two legs don't know anything about the Constitution, don't have any conception of the Constitution, and they're mostly just tuning in for the sheer joy Sorry about that. Sometimes it's kind of hard to do this program without an interruption. But anyway, no, it's not just that he's high crimes and misdemeanors don't apply. But that's one of those Dunning-Kruger effect things, and Josh Bernstein is so goddamn dumb that he doesn't know, you know, what he doesn't know. But stupid has never kept people from being dangerous. Oh, no.
That is high crimes and misdemeanors to the point of treason. And these people should be executed. If they are found guilty of this, there should be a trial, and they should be executed. And I have no problem saying that publicly. Okay, Right Wing Watch, in case you're watching, you're right. They should be executed for treason.
Yeah. He wants people killed for crimes that exist only in his own mind and nowhere else. It's interesting that this clown, we'll leave that be. But you never know who's watching or listening to what. And if somebody squeezes off a round at one of the people that he listed, how do you not come back on Josh Bernstein? He's not just an entertainer. He can't use the Limbaugh defense. But these brown shirts, these fascists, are proliferating like mushrooms after a spring rain. I had not heard of him before until Right Wing Watch found him. He's actually got a Wikipedia entry. The crap that you just heard with him calling for people to be murdered, well, that goes out on Stitcher, on YouTube, Roku, Amazon TV. And he's deemed a top 100 conservative all-star. Thanks for the info, Ron and Raleigh. He's deemed an analyst and a political pundit. Somebody needs to go and do some editing on his Wikipedia page, because you know what they don't say? Where's he come from? How did he get catapulted? Who's behind him? And how is it calling for, because remember, we had that other clip where he was calling for cops to be killed. Now, usually, that'll get your average booger-eating maggot all up in arms and hooting about how Blue Lives Matter. But no, there was no hue and cry when Josh Bernstein called for it to be done. I guess we can take away from that that, well, Josh Bernstein is the right color, if you know what I mean, and you do. Meanwhile, Darlene in Connecticut says, that's a bullshit lie about Clapper. He tried to alert McConnell and other senators about what the intel community was finding concerning Russian interference in the 2016 election to encourage them to warn the American people, and McConnell refused to issue a warning statement. McConnell said to Clapper that this was a ploy by then-President Obama to mess with the election against Trump and in favor of Hillary. McConnell, Darlene notes, makes up his own history, his own reality, his own fucking world. Clapper was totally gobsmacked by this reckless and negligent denialism on the part of McConnell and the Republicans. I don't recall Clapper ever going to the Supreme Court. Huh? What a total idiot Josh Bernstein is. Well, he is that. But, the business about the Supreme Court says that, well, the goofball story claims that Clapper went to a Supreme Court justice to discuss the Russia case and cites, quote, a high-level member of the intelligence community who witnessed the meeting and said Clapper discussed going to one of the three female Supreme Court justices to make the case that alleged Russian interference could invalidate Trump's claim to the presidency. And all the article is a loop of information turning back on itself. Irish Dave says he's deemed an analyst. Isn't that just a typo of anal cyst, such as Air Marshal Rush of the Limp Waffle used to dodge military service? Yes, well, no, that wasn't an anal. That was a polonial cyst. It doesn't have to be specific. Oh, let's not go there this early in the program, Dave. Let's don't and say we didn't. No. Hey, by the way, if you look around out there, this is going back to the top of to the first story. There is a little clip of video of a member of Congress. I can't remember who it was. Maybe it was Barbara Lee. Holding up a photograph of Felipe Alonso Gomez and saying, this little boy did not have to die. And Kirstjen Nielsen, the head of Department of Homeland Security, replies, who? Oh, him. Who? That's why I said say his name. Because Kirstjen Nielsen couldn't even be bothered to remember it. You know, she's so white and he's so not. Mm-hmm. Oh, and then another one of those, the 17th tier right-wing yakking apes. Bill Mitchell. This isn't quite as potentially harrowing as Josh Bernstein wanting everybody he doesn't like to be executed. No, this is more in the way of idol worship. Bill Mitchell, because he's a highfalutin right-wing commentator, made a video standing in his kitchen in front of his sink and his stainless steel refrigerator to remind the maggots of just what greatness they are in the presence of anytime they see the, wow, did you see that picture? The ballooning image of Donald J. Trump. See that picture of him in his commander-in-chief in jacket? Whoa. Somebody's not sticking to his diet. But that's okay. Because Donald J. Trump is greatness incarnate. And not just any greatness. Specific greatness.
I believe that this is God's country. And I believe that he is Donald Trump is his man that he's chosen for this time. People say, why would God pick a man like Donald Trump?
By the way, apparently there is now a competition going on over among the evangelical right for best head of helmet hair. For the longest time, we just took it as a matter of course that the best head of helmet hair belonged to helmet-headed proud son of Stanford, Brian Fisher of the American Family Association of Tupelo, Mazzuppistan. Well, Brian's got competition. Bill Mitchell has him a head of helmet hair that can give Brian Fisher a run for his money any day of the week. And in terms of trying to insert that helmet head up the fundament of Donald Trump to the point that you can see him back there next to his tonsils any time that Trump yawns, well, he's giving Brian Fisher a run for his money that way, too.
Look back throughout the Bible. Donald Trump is exactly the kind of man that God has picked throughout time. Why? Why would God pick the Abrahams? Why would he pick the Davids? Why would he pick the Samsons? Why would he pick the Solomons? Why would he pick the Pauls, who was Saul and used to murder Christians and ended up writing about half of the New Testament? Why?
Dude's kind of talking like he's into the Adderall, too. Or maybe that's just because I'm Southern and talk a little slower. But Abraham? I don't recall any stories in the Pentateuch of Abraham bankrupting any casinos. Solomon? Solomon was wise, we are told. And I don't think there's ever been a moment in which there was any indication that Donald J. Trump has any wisdom at all. David? Well, David was relatively innocent. I mean, he was just a young bisexual man who apparently had a fling with the king's son, Jonathan. But there was nothing particularly salacious about it. Jonathan loved David as his own heart. I think is what you'll find there. Now, later on, they went on to fuck up. Abraham turned out to be a liar and a sleazebag when he tried to pimp his wife out to Pharaoh, saying, oh, no, your Pharaohness, that's not my wife. She's my sister. And that lasted, according to the book, until God dumped out a big bag of plagues on Egypt. God was forever dumping out plagues on Egypt back then. And David, well, David was doing okay until, and this was after Jonathan had died, until one of his 700 and some odd wives and concubines weren't enough, and he had to have some other guy's wife and sent him off to battle and got him killed, and God punished David by killing David's little baby. Or some crazy shit like that. I'm sure I'm messing some of it up, but God murdered a baby to get back at David. Pretty petty, really. Samson? Well, Samson was just a fucking hippie.
Dude, I'm not cutting my hair. And it smells so good when we oil it with the patchouli, dude.
And none of these people are anything remotely like Donald Trump. Nonetheless, that doesn't slow down Bill Mitchell because he knows his audience. And he knows that, well, he's talking to a group of people who floss their teeth with their toenail clippings.
Why would he pick these people? Why would he pick these people that have got that had, you know, failings and some not so great things in their past and not necessarily tremendously known as pious people and use them to save the world? Why? Because then we know it's God. If God just used the most pious and the most perfect all the time to save the world, we would just assume, well, it was these guys were so pious and perfect, they did it. But when he takes somebody who had some needed a redemption arc, okay, and he uses them to save the world, then it's like, wow, that's amazing. And it's like Han Solo in Star Wars.
Who?
Han Solo was a hero from the very beginning. As a
if we're going to talk mythic heroes, yeah, David, Solomon, Abraham, Han fucking Solo. I love you. I know. I don't think that ever happened with Donald Trump either. I don't think his mother ever even told him she loved him. No. And really, it's the wrong movie. Because if you've ever seen a picture of Donald Trump's mother's hairdo, she's clearly more out of the mold of a character from David Lynch's vision of Dune than anything in the Star Wars universe.
Great guy. It would have made God of a boring story. Yeah, okay, yeah, Galactic Hero saved the universe. You know, he was Mr. Clean. We get that. But he was a rapscallion. He was a smuggler. He was the bad guy. He was the bad guy that was going to, you know, I remember when Luke was on the ice planet and that big, you know, Sasquatch grabbed him. And
that big Sasquatch grabbed him. Yes, of course. Then again, you know, Han was a smuggler. Well, Donald Trump is, and you know, maybe this is the front end of the argument. Donald Trump is mobbed up with the Russians. So he'll just repeat this argument when that little bit of information is finally and fully confirmed. Well, of course he's a bad guy. That proves God's doing it.
I was like, I'm leaving. I'm out of here. You know, and Leia's like, oh yeah, I expected that of you. And the audience is like, oh, Han, how can you do that? Luke, you know, he's in trouble. And then Luke all of a sudden, or Han all of a sudden shows up. And Cat finds Luke and saves Luke. And you're like, yes, that's redemption arc, folks.
Somebody needs to not let Bill Mitchell go to any more movies. No, just no. What's that, Darlene? The late Mrs. Mother Trump kind of reminds me of Cruella de Vil. I'm thinking she had, Darlene, you've seen the David Lynch Dune movie, right? I trust, please. If you haven't, you should, because it's just full of people who look like Trump's relatives. Okay, I think we've perplexed Robert in Australia. God uses losers, so we know it's him. I'm not the Messiah. Only the true Messiah denies his divinity. All right, then, I am the Messiah. Messiah! Messiah! Don't let him see any Monty Python movies either, Bill Mitchell. No, I don't think so. Well, we've gotten to Asa, too. What in God's name is this half-aware imbecile blathering about? I trust you're talking about Bill Mitchell and not me, Asa. But he's talking about how the fact that Donald Trump is a horrible human being proves that he is the anointed of God to lead Merca. Right? Yeah? Oh, God, I love that clip. I love that clip. I'm going to have to take a minute just to run it because it's so damn funny. You remember, what was it? The Untergang, der Untergang, I forget what the name of the word is. Downfall in German. And all the proliferation, the scene in the movie where Hitler finds out that everything's going to come apart. It's done. It's over. Parties. Don Meredith is singing. Ooh, there's a dated cultural reference that won't be gotten by anybody under 50. Well, there's a Hitler finds out about Star Wars Episode 7.
Mit dem Angriff Steiners wird das alles in Ordnung kommen.
I heard that The Last Jedi holds a 93% approval rating on Rotten Tomatoes.
Mein Führer, Steiner. Steiner konnte nicht genügend Kräfte für einen Angriff massieren.
Steiner reports that the audience scores at a shocking 56%.
Der Angriff Steiner ist nicht
the lowest in the Star Wars saga. Ah, well, I'll watch it later, but I'm sorry. I can't resist that sort of thing. But the filibobster is now passed. I think we've got enough stuff out on the table to keep us busy for the next couple of hours. Let's run over to the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable in the old holler tree that we rent from the Keebler Elves and check in with Sparky. Hey, Sparky.
You mean that old song, Turn Out the Lights, the Party's Over?
Precisely. Yeah, no one under 50 is going to get that reference.
Well, how long was Don Meredith on Monday Night Football?
Oh, a decade or so.
It didn't seem like it was that long. Anyway, I got my leaf shredded.
Oh, yeah.
Leaf shredded.
Shredded?
Well, yeah. That's what I said. I didn't misspeak.
Well, no, I'm just trying to figure out. I mean,
I have a system.
Okay.
See, it's not just me, Sparky.
First, I use a tarp to collect the leaves. I got a barrel, a 33-gallon barrel that I use, and I gather up the leaves in there, and I lay out a tarp, and I just keep dumping leaves on that. Then I pull the tarp over here to the man cave. And then I fill up a barrel with leaves, and then I use my weed eater. And I got an old Ryobi electric weed eater. It'll reach all the way down the bottom of the barrel. You just start putting it in there, and you start shredding the leaves. You move it up and down, it shreds the leaves. And then take that barrel, dump it into another barrel, because all the leaves that are on the bottom didn't get shredded. And then you shred those, and then you dump it in another barrel, and you got shreds.
You know what? I got to say, that actually sounds kind of fun. On a late December, tolerable because, afternoon.
Because Green Waste decided they were going to give us all Green Waste barrels instead of you picking up. Rolling 96-gallon barrels you put stuff in. So I filled up, and then I requested a second one, so I got them both filled up, and they'll be picking them up tomorrow because of the holiday. They didn't pick them up
today. I was going to say that should make for some awesome compost.
Well, if I felt like just putting it in the ground and rototilling it right now, I don't, but it's still a little early.
Yeah, because that can make for some pretty rich soil, that leaf waste. Most of the soil in Appalachia in the hills is a function of you know, the compost, the natural compost process of leaf waste.
Yeah. Man, I'm snacking on smoked turkey here with some Ritz crackers and some cheese.
So now that you've seen how well that that electric smoker works, is there going to be more stuff being run through it?
Eventually. I did the turkey. I'm waiting for my stepson's wife to smoke the fish for them. We got a package of salmon and some rock cod to smoke.
Ooh, the cod will be good. Not that the salmon won't, but I love cod. Well, somewhere along the way, maybe you'll get inspired and do your own corned beef. That's awfully good, too.
Yeah, I doubt it. I'm not big on corned beef.
Well, as John will tell you, that's just another way of saying brisket. And
That's right, brisket.
Hey, John Bredevo, how are you, buddy?
Doing fine, Bob. How are you?
I'm good. Have you gotten your Palmans yet? We got ours.
I got mine, buddy. And everybody loves them in the family. I'm glad he sent a big 10. I mean, he sent a bunch of almonds, Paul. And they are delicious, buddy. Yep.
Nothing quite like them. So,
even my parrot loves them, but he ain't getting very many of them.
Well, you know, I knew what was in the box, so I opened mine at the post office because Steve from Georgistan has made me hyper aware of the need to express gratitude to our postal workers. So I said, I told my postmistress, I said, you got a little bowl or something? She says, yeah. I said, you like almonds? She says, I love them. So I opened them up and I said, yeah, get you a bowl to snack on. And she takes like two or three of them. I said, just eat one real quick. She's like, oh. I said, yeah, get a few more.
Get a few more.
I'll need them. And so she was tickled pink as well.
Mm-mm-mm. Yeah. Yeah, I see when you said, you know, you can't eat just one or two. No, You get those things are habit for me.
Oh, yes, they are.
They just keep on going in the mouth. It's like eating peanuts, I mean to tell you.
Yeah, and better than any peanut you ever had.
Yeah, no shit. Those things are really good. I'm going to have to tell Paul thank you very much for that.
Well, I think you just did.
And they showed up real quick, too. I got that box out of that post office box up there, and man, that thing's got some weight to it. And I usually wait to open stuff until I get home so Mama can enjoy the surprise, too. And we opened that thing up, and that big tin of almonds was in there, and I just, yeah, I bragged on them on my show, too. Them things are tasty, very good.
Well, that'll tickle Paul to...
If he's listening, thank you, Paul, very much, buddy.
Yep, Paul from Parts Unknown. And the only one outstanding now is they have to make it across the Atlantic to Chris in Germany. And the Holiday Palmand Fest will be complete.
Oh, there you go. Spread the love all over the earth. There you go. Spread it over to Europe.
What's going on in John Bredevo's world?
Sheesh, too much stuff to talk about, buddy. I'm distracted by so many things that ain't even funny. I'll stay busy, though. You know, just had a lot on my mind here lately. And I messed up my show. I missed it on Wednesday, so I had to do one Thursday, and then I did one today to catch up. And
I hope we didn't screw you up Christmas Eve.
No, I really enjoyed that. As a matter of fact, I had completely forgotten that you were going to do a show, and I apologize for that. And then when you rang in, I was live on YouTube, I think I was, because I did a live show on YouTube, and then later on I did a live show on Facebook. But no, you rang in, and I just looked at the camera, and I just said, oh, I got to answer this, you know. And you were on mic the whole time, so yeah.
Oh,
I
fun.
Enjoyed that, Bob. Yeah. That's how come I said say hello to the Blue Dot family, because they was all listening to you.
Well, you know what? Okay. You got to have something to got to have goals and stuff. I would far rather see you have 78 million subscribers on YouTube than this PewDiePie creature.
Oh, Jesus! Yes, I know about him. Do you believe how much money that man makes? Jesus.
Well, and not just that, he, you know, he endorses Nazis.
Yeah. I can't believe he's still on there. Well, hey, Rick.
Okay, somebody's got me running in delay now.
There you go.
One, two, three,
it's
four,
and
five.
Away we go.
Yeah, Ron and Raleigh told me, John, that PewDiePie is worth somewhere between $30 and $50 million, and he pulled in $12 million off YouTube last year.
Are you shitting me?
Yeah, Ron and Raleigh said, "Sweet Mary, we chose the wrong profession, Bob."
No shit. What? I'm doing the whole wrong approach here, Bob. Politics just ain't cutting it, Bob.
Yeah, but at least you're out there working that YouTube side of the street. That 50 million can't be far behind.
Oh yeah. Well, we're getting close to 10,000. We're trying to get there.
There's a line from producers, Mel Brooks, "Don't be a schmarty, join the Nazi party." That was part of Springtime for Hitler.
Springtime for Hitler, yeah.
So.
You know, I don't care how big a dollar that is. I can't bring myself to want that Nazi dollar.
No. There's a line I draw, baby. You know, it's no, but my kids have said, "Dad, we need to start a channel." They got one of those heads up, this virtual reality. You know, you put the thing over your face there. "Oh, Dad, sit in this chair and we'll just let you play games and put you on TV, on YouTube. That we'll start a channel." Yeah. No,
I freely acknowledge that I am not particularly YouTube literate, because if I want to, I'll go and check, see, you know, is this song there or a clip from a movie or something like that. But these YouTube personalities, I'm lost ball in high grass. I recently found out, for instance, that, and I'm not telling tales out of school, it's no big deal. I recently found out that a lot of young girls are go to drag queens on YouTube to learn how, you know, when they're like 12, 13 years old, to learn how to do their makeup.
Is that right?
I kid you not.
There's a calling for anything you want on YouTube. There's a channel for it. I don't care what it is you're doing. There's some kind of channel on YouTube that will entertain your hobby. I'm sure. We do pretty good. My show that I do on I record my show, and then I put it up on Facebook and YouTube and on Twitter, and I try to get back to all the comments, and then, you know, so I'm not a big, I don't know what I'm doing on YouTube. My son made a page for me, and all I do is upload. You know, that's what I do.
Push button, start talking, push button again.
Yeah. My main problem is when I push the button, I hope I just hit start and not stop, which Sparky and Dennis there have seen me do several times. The other day I did a whole rant, Bob. Had to be a good 30-minute, close to a 30-minute rant, and said goodbye, hit the button off, and was sitting there talking to Sparky and Dennis on the Discord channel, and I just went to go check how long that video went, and there was two little videos. The video I was talking to them before I started my rant, and a little video that started right after I ended my rant.
Oh, no, so you hit stop twice. You hit stop twice. I got to tell you, that's the sort of thing I would expect of me, John.
Oh, man, I'm telling you, I've done that several times. Makes for great outtakes if you want to make a little tape of just how stupid you are, you know, just show the world. I got several of those, But that just ticks it out. You do a good rant, and like Dennis says, I asked Dennis and Sparky, "How was the rant when I get done? You know, how was that?" And, that was great. And then I find out it didn't record. Son of a bitch. Got to go back and do it again.
Yeah, see, this is why I'm afraid to try to expand into other platforms, because I've got just enough buttons now to screw up without adding more.
Well, see, now live, Bob, to me, I love live because there's several benefits. One, I could run my mouth forever. It doesn't matter. I got to watch how long I go because I'll easily go out for an hour. But when I'm done, I'm done. When I quit going live and done, it's done. I don't have to transfer it and post it and share it and all that stuff. So I like going live. I should do it more often. Less work on my part.
Oh dear, I think we've had had a little moment here. Just got a note from Jeff in Hellhole, Indiana. Bob, I think I just scared my neighbors to death. Don't play audio of one of these asshats without issuing the obligatory hockey puck warning. Well, that's on me. Uh-oh. Sorry about that, Jeff.
Scared your neighbors, huh, Jeff?
And by the way, you know, I knew it was going to happen sooner or later. Agnes and I were sitting around earlier today. And lo and behold, not too far from me, one of my neighbors around here, blam, 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 somebody got him a new Freedom Protector.
Oh, there you go. Yeah, yep. We get that out here a lot, Bob.
Yeah, as long as the blams are all far away, I'm okay. It's if I hear one go,
you around here, you just have to trust that they're shooting, you know, in the right direction. There's a river out there. Most people shoot across the river into the opposite bank. But yeah, that thought crosses your mind. Somebody down the street got him a 50 cal. I know that sounds so. Oh, great. They, you know, and New Year's Eve, we'll hear a lot of that one.
Has anybody heard about the guy that shot his lawnmower? He had packed it with dynamite. Apparently he tore off one of his legs because of the explosion.
Was it dynamite or tannerite? I've got that.
Oh, I don't know what it was.
It's probably it was tannerite.
Yeah, tannerite.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes an explosion, baby.
He gets the Darwin Award for the day.
Yeah.
And this guy was in Georgia, so one of your brethren.
Hey, Steve. You know this fella?
Is your name Steve?
Out in the ghetto. Have you ever felt that cold wind blow? If you don't know what I mean, won't you stand up and scream? Because there's things going on that you don't know.
Oh,
hold on. Okay, wait a minute.
Sing it, brother.
Give me a second here. In fact, I think we can share this with the wide, wide world.
Is it confidential information there, Bob?
No, it's, let's see. I just happen to have handy the audio of this particular genius. And for a minute there, it says the video comes from some law enforcement agency or some such. But then, this is a guy all in black, and he's got his semi-automatic AR-15 Freedom Protector.
Oh, okay.
Oh, Jesus. Yeah,
Freedom Protector.
Yeah.
He's not particularly, let's say, competent with the weapon. Here we go. Here's a disclaimer. It's not so much for the video, but for the audio, there is some, there is a graphic quality to it. So he's got him. It looks like he's somebody's videoing for him because he's gonna put him up a Freedom Protector shooting stuff with my Freedom Protector video.
He's gonna
be a YouTube.
I'm gonna save America.
He's gonna be a YouTube superstar.
Yep. Watch how many views I get. It's gonna light up. Watch this.
Here we go.
Hold my beer.
Exactly. Hey y'all, watch it. Yeah. Hey y'all, watch this. Here we go. Yeah. Now, see, what he's done is he's set himself up his own little private range, and he's got shit to shoot at, like, you know, buckets and stuff, you know, because Because what?
Because he's just showing that he could hit, you know.
Yeah, well, yeah, he's ready to defend Murka MAGA against the ISIS MS-13 when they come biling across the Rio Grande.
Any minute, right now.
He's an agent of QAnon too.
He's probably part of the QAnon bodyguard force.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
those fellers. Yeah.
So what they do is they set up little piles of shit along a trail out in the woods, and they go along and they got their AR-15 up again their shoulder like they're looking for tourists. And
they're ready.
Kabang,
they're ready.
Kabang. So that's what you're hearing here.
All right, taking out every target.
He swings right. He swings left. He shoots dead ahead.
Right in their head.
And then he has to change magazines. And he puts in a new magazine.
Oh, yeah.
And there it is. Wait a minute. There it is.
Uh-oh.
Dead ahead of him.
Right.
The terrorist MS-13 ISIS lawnmower of doom. God, it's a riding lawnmower, and he's behind it, and it looks like it's a getting away.
I'm afeard.
I'd be afeard too, John Britovo, because you see, when you let them ISIS MS-13 riding lawnmowers get away from you, you never know, they might go and mow again. That's right.
Let's hope he surrounds it on all three sides.
And he's got it right in his sights, and he's got a fresh magazine in his AR-15 Freedom Protector.
Save America.
Hallelujah, MAGA. And then this. And then this. Yeah, it's going to take a few more rounds to take that ISIS MS-13 Craftsman riding lawnmower out.
Get another clip ready.
But he thinks he's got it wounded, but he don't understand that an ISIS MS-13 Craftsman riding lawnmower wounded is more dangerous than an ISIS MS-13 riding lawnmower just
to come out vicious, Bob.
In full retreat. They do. A cornered ISIS MS-13 riding lawnmower is the most dangerous MS-13 ISIS riding lawnmower. And so he ain't feared.
He's got his AR-15, right, Bob?
He's got his AR-15, MAGA, by God. And so you see, he puts a few rounds into it, and then he starts to creep up on it. He might have to take out his sawtooth MAGA Bowie knife and slit its fuel line.
Hand a lawnmower. Hand a lawnmower.
Right.
It's gruesome.
What's this?
Did he live, Bob?
Courtesy of Thomas over at FYI, ISIS MS-13 lawnmower. I'm a little scared. Hold me. Yeah.
Hold me.
So I
don't blame you. I'd be afeared, too.
You can just feel the suspense. The suspense is a building. All right, here we go.
Oh, what's he doing to do now? Oh, another clip.
Oh, move a leg off!
Oh! What happened, Bob?
Well, see, he gets up there real close, but then the ISIS MS-13 Craftsman riding lawnmower turns on him. And it was a wearing one of them ISIS MS-13 Craftsman riding lawnmower dynamite belts. And it done blowed up. He pumped a round into it, and then the whole thing blowed up, and all you can hear him holler is, I blowed my leg off!
I blowed my leg off! Holy shit!
We fucking hee-haws, man. Jesus, I was trying to walk Christmas Eve and I heard that bullshit. Scared me to death, man. Little Cletus started peeing all over me. It was horrible, man.
That's horrible.
Hey, Steve, where is Walton County, Georgia?
Probably someplace I never want to go, Bob, but I'll check.
That's right. They got vicious lawnmowers.
Apparently, there's been an outbreak of ISIS MS-13 disabled craftsmen riding lawnmowers down there.
And they're just sitting there acting like they're dead. As soon as you turn your back.
it's a shame he only lost his leg. That only gives him a quarter of a Darwin Award.
Oh, you know? His gene pool continues.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, but that's a Darwin Award with MAGA clusters.
Yeah.
Well, you know, he still has his other leg, you know. He still has one to jump around on when he wants to get back out there and start shooting again.
Yeah, well, he can hop right along after them ISIS MS-13 craftsmen riding lawnmowers.
You just think about all the war stories he's going to be able to tell all of his buddies about that battle. I mean, it he's going to
Nah, you
it
know
all.
You know what it's going to be. You don't really see too much of his face, so by the time he gets all healed up, he'll be sitting there down to the dewdrop end saying, yeah, it all happened when that IED blowed up on me over there in Ramadi in the Iraq, such as.
Yeah, such as it was. I'd like to tell y'all about it, but
I think he needs to get his own MAGA riding mower to take on that ISIS mower next time, you know. It's only safe approach for him.
Fight fire with fire. I see where you're going. Yeah.
Like tanks, like a tank fight, you know?
Yeah, lawnmower war. Hey, I think I saw that on YouTube.
Tank wars.
And I'm guessing that the local gospel sharp's not going to wander by and say, well, there, Eustace. Them that lives by the AR-15 blows their legs off by the AR-15 because it's right there in the good book.
Right there.
Well, he's lucky
stupid
he didn't
shit
lose a lot
thou
of blood.
Shalt not do.
He could have lost a lot of blood from blood loss. Of course, I mean he could have died from blood loss. So the guy's not only is he an idiot, but you know he could have basically died.
Hey, yo. That's all besides the point, though. The video was great, and I bet he's getting lots of hits.
Well, they featured in the Washington. They featured it in the Washington Post, so he's pretty near viral right now. Problem is, when you done blowed your leg off in the great battle against the ISIS MS-13 craftsman disabled riding lawnmower, viral is the last thing you want to be. Because I can tell you what, amoxicillin ain't worth shit against viral.
No.
Well, in the chat room, listen to this. In the chat room, Little Thunder says that he is now a manager at IHOP. Yuck, yuck.
Oh, there you go.
Oh, wait a minute. Hold on.
War hero.
Yeah.
Cowbell, Little Thunder. Thank you.
Walton County is east of Atlanta, due east, not very far from Sandy Springs, Bob. You're from the area, so.
Holy cow. I didn't realize that. Yeah,
I thought it'd be out in Hick Hall area somewhere, you know, down near Bainbridge or somewhere. But no, it's not that far away, man.
You ain't seen no creepy craftsman mowers running around, have you there, Bob?
No, and I bet they, and you know what? There's one less of them in Walton County, Georgia, too.
Well, you best keep your eye open now. Now you know they're in the area.
Yeah, you know what? Now, all of a sudden, I don't feel quite so bad about that feller over there squeezing off a few rounds through his... you know, through his new Christmas 30-06.
Goddamn, I don't know how you feel about that shit, Bob, but I hate it. I do, man. I can't even go for a walk, you know. Here I am, some fat buck with a diabetes, trying to get my sugar level down, and got to worry about some hee-haw putting a fucking bullet through me, you know, with his brand-new Christmas present freedom detector.
Yep.
Well, it's
freedom in the, you know, God, you know,
that's
God
just
bless
a
America.
Small price to pay.
Yeah.
For his right to, you know, I just, you know, what it is, what I always say, it's not just guns.
It's frustrating, yeah. And Bob has to tolerate coal burning, yeah.
Yeah, it's not just.
That gun.
Yeah.
That gun. They, just like Bob described, they don't want just a rifle. Hell no, you could get
No, this wasn't just a bang.
No,
every
they want,
minute
they
or
want
two.
The
no,
AR-15. They want
every
the
10
stock.
Seconds.
They want the vest. They want the, you know, they want everything. The tactical belt.
It scares the fuck out of my dogs, you know. Jeez,
oh,
man.
Oh, Lord. Yeah. Yeah, and New Year's is coming. I got my donkey under the house.
Yeah,
I
got
all nervous.
I got the thunder blanket all ready for Cletus, you know. I'm prepared, you know. It does work. It does work for any animal out there. Yes, sir, it does. It's a blanket. You can get it from Amazon. It wraps around them. It's easy to put on like Velcro. Yeah. For some reason, they feel like they're being hugged. and they don't get freaked out, you know.
Yeah.
Bucks are stupid.
I have to go down there and pet my donkey every once in a while during the night to calm her down. She gets a little jittish about that shit. You know. Man, we're way out. I'm at a dead end road out in the country, baby. Everybody comes out here and pops their shit.
Uncle John, I bet you could sing, can't you? You've got a vocal voice. Like, you could sing. Yeah, come on.
Bro. I couldn't carry a tune in a book.
Yeah, you've never tried. You've never tried. I bet you could sing like ZZ Top, man.
Oh, no. I listened to ZZ Top.
Yeah, I was listening to T-Haws and Fandango today, and I thought, I bet you can. Have you ever tried? Or?
Oh, no, I never sing. I don't like singing. Oh. It's against my religion.
He's bullshit.
And I
so
take
bad.
Offense to that.
We hear him sing every time on the Discord channel.
I know he can. I can tell, man. I've got an ear for that kind of stuff.
I try to belt out a little bit of something right before I turn that camera on. It does. It just kind of, puts me in that mood of, well, I've already got my voice raised. Let's go ahead and turn this camera on and act like an idiot. So.
Usually with people with a good speaking voice have a good singing voice. It's been rule of thumb.
Well, I can guarantee you.
Bob. Don't go there.
I'm presuming you're thinking I have a good speaking voice, and I can guarantee you I can't sing.
You can sing. I've heard you. You just don't give yourself any credit, you know.
Just takes practice.
Yep.
Bob does the best impressions, though, for sure.
Yeah.
Well, thank you,
Bob. Bob's got a voice for those.
Well, and Bob, are you familiar with Corn Fed from Duckman? The little.
Oh, yes.
Well, he had a great voice, a hilarious voice. And so you say that monotone voice like a machine gun, and then you just whip out the jokes, and it's like nonstop laughs. One of the best characters in animation, I think.
Oh, I love Duckman. That was wonderful.
Oh, yeah. Oh, so do I. I love Duckman. I wish they continue that. But...
And Ren, I was a big Ren and Stimpy fan as well.
Yeah, that too.
And this is modern animation, and it's not so modern anymore. God, I guess it's 25 years old. But whoever, I know he's got a name, I just don't know it. Whoever the guy is who voiced the Brain on Pinky and the Brain.
Oh. Jeez, I'm not familiar with that.
Because the Brain from Pinky and the Brain is basically just an Orson Welles impression. But it's side-splitting.
Animaniacs.
Deep voice like this.
Yeah, from Deep Animaniacs, voice. Right.
Yeah. That's good.
Speaking of Orson Welles...
Thank you, Steve. I was waiting to see how long you would tolerate the silence.
That documentary, they'll Love Me When I'm Dead. My God, have you, Bob? You said you seen it last night. We were kind of chit chatting back and forth when we were talking to Mr.
That's
Fisher,
a bizarre damn documentary.
Oh, I saw that. That's weird.
Yeah. I mean, did he plan on finishing that, or was he punking everybody? I haven't figured that out yet.
What is this, a documentary about?
Yeah, it's a documentary about Orson Welles' last film.
Okay.
Last movie, and he was very serious. He put years of his life and blood, sweat, and tears, and money, and the Shah of Iran was financing it before everything went south over there, and it's just crazy the way everything...
Now, if you like that, Steve, there's another documentary out there about the guy who had who originally wanted to make a movie out of Dune. And I think he was Spanish. And
I'm gonna write it down.
And I can't remember the name of it, but
Email it to me when it comes back to you.
It is. I mean, I sat down and watched it. I mean, Mick Jagger was involved. I mean, the design elements were. I think they even courted Salvador Dali for some of the design elements.
Wow. Damn.
Orson Welles took a hell of a lot of people for a ride on this thing. I mean, even Dr. Melfi from The Soprano, her boss from that series, was actually one of the head guys on the movie. I can't place his name.
Oh, but, and Rich, the weirdest part, Rich Little.
Yes.
Oh, I like him.
Yeah, he pulled him in out of nowhere and promised him all kind of cloud farts and everything, and it's just... Never came to pass, man. it's just bizarre watching. I hear radios clicking off as I'm talking, but if you're into just weirdness and old classic directors, it's just streaming on Netflix now. Check it out.
Well, last night,
last
night and today, I went wandering around on Netflix, and I like to watch foreign language stuff from time to time. And I saw a series there, and it was Russian made, called Trotsky. And so it's all subtitles, so you have to read. You know, it's like reading television. But that was quite fascinating. We got two or three episodes into that, and then today, on the recommendation of a buddy, we watched several episodes of, I went ahead and clicked on it because it's Michael Douglas, but more importantly, Alan Arkin. Alan Arkin is just wonderful.
Well, the two of them together, how the fuck did you go wrong, man?
And it's called the Kaminsky Method.
Huh.
And it's about an aging acting teacher played by, and it's all set in Hollywood, L.A., whatever, an aging acting teacher played by Michael Douglas and his best friend, his agent, played by Alan Arkin. And Alan Arkin is, well, I've said so many times how much I adore The In-Laws, in which he played Sheldon Cornpet, the mild-mannered dentist. It's over the ocean to Scranton, Pennsylvania. that thing remains genius. I mean, I just watch it every few months, just because it remains such zany fun. Here's a recommendation. Over on Amazon Prime right now, I don't know for how much longer, but you can screen. It's a mad, 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 mad world.
Oh, yeah.
The original. Yeah. Jonathan Winters, Phil Silvers, Jimmy Durante, Buddy Hackett, Ethel Merman.
Jeez.
Have you never seen it, Steve?
No. I will in a few hours, yeah.
Oh, you won't be. You won't be okay. I mean, you will hurt yourself laughing.
It's got a great opening, but I don't want it to divulge it. It's
no spoilers.
Oh, no spoilers, okay.
I reach back to Don Ameche and Francis Lang. Those two gave me a lot. You ever heard of the Battling Bickersons?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. That to me, I love that.
Oh, by the way, the Dune documentary, and apparently you can find it on YouTube as well. It's called Hodorowsky's Dune. It's JODOROWSKY'S Hodorowsky's Dune, or Jodorowsky, or Yodorowsky. Who knows what to do with that damn J?
No shit.
But it's that's the Dune thing, and it'll blow your mind. Thanks to Robert in Australia for that. I've seen it. It would have been an incredible film if it had been made. From the artwork, the imagination was far ahead of filmmaking abilities of the day.
Well, that's just the Orson Welles movie. How many cuts did he have in the erotic shower scene?
Took
3 years. Yeah, it took 3 years for him to do it, and he had like over 400 cuts in it. I don't know who's punking who with this thing, and it'll blow your mind. It really will, and I don't mean to dwell on it. It's just, and it's not an easy watch either. It took me 3 settings to get through the whole damn thing. How about you, Bob? Did you catch it one time or?
Oh yeah.
But just picking the fascinating mind of Orson Welles and being able to get inside of where he was coming from and what he's trying to present and what's his final message with this thing. And a part of me's thinking, right. And I'm thinking he didn't want to end it because he knew when he did, he would die. You know, that's another takeaway from it.
Yeah, like Samson and the haircut.
Yes, exactly.
Well, we just had a note from Monique, who said, "I hope Tracy calls in. This is the funniest on the porch, and a perfect way to end 2018. What is it with white guys and lawnmower violence? Didn't Rand Paul have an episode with his lawnmower and violence?" Rand Paul got that skinny libertarian ass plum kicked.
I'll call to Tracy.
Well, he come got on in. Lady Rand cab driver, white courtesy money. Phone. Lady cab driver, white courtesy phone.
We need a connector report, Tracy.
I called her out on my show the other day. I was talking about Tracy.
Hey, let's take a minute and check in over here. Flavio is with us this evening.
How's it going?
Hey, good. How about you?
Good. I'm wearing my my headphones so that I'm only listening to you on my headphone and talking on the microphone. That way there is no echo. And I was told that I had to mute my microphone.
Well, yeah, you have to mute when you're not talking so that we don't get your room noise.
Right, but if I'm using my headset, then it's not that bad, right?
No, I mean, you use the micro. Do you have a microphone on the headset?
No, I have the microphone on the computer.
Okay, yeah, it's even better when you've got a mic'd headset and you're like in the room.
Okay, and is there echo or anything? Or
no, just a little room noise. But you know, we're not producing the dark side of the moon here, so we're not going to sweat it.
Okay. Have any of you seen The Death of Stalin yet?
Yes. Have you?
No. I was just wondering because I just got it. And what's the consensus?
Well, I liked it. It's okay. It's a comedy. I can't remember that guy's name. I can never pronounce his name. He plays...
wait, time out. Stop. I'll stop. Something called The Death of Stalin is a comedy? Is this like Monty Python's The Death of Mary, Queen of Scots? Are you Mary, Queen of Scots?
Or Hitler on Ice?
I read reviews, and it's like, it's a comedy, but it's not inconceivable that that's how things went down.
No, it gives you kind of like this open-ended view of what may have happened, but Buscemi is in, and I think Buscemi plays Khrushchev. I can't remember who plays Beria, but they do show Beria getting killed at the end. They're all like sick of him, you know. But I have to watch it again because it's been so long. It's been over 10 months since I've seen it. But it's not a bad film. But the film to watch about Stalin is The Inner Circle with Tom Hulce. He plays Stalin's projectionist. That came out in 1992, and it's a classic. Especially when they're around Stalin, everybody kind of gets nervous, like Stalin's going to put them on the list. But it's a really well done film. So if you want to watch a film about that period of history, watch The Inner Circle.
I'll note it. The Inner Circle.
Yeah.
When you say Buscemi, do you mean Steve Buscemi from The Sopranos?
Steve Buscemi, yeah.
Fargo. He was Tony Uncle B in The Sopranos, and he also directed Pine Barrens, which is one of The Sopranos' fan favorite episodes before he even starred in it. So,
yeah.
Guy is multi talented. Really is, man.
Well, he's an amazing guy, but he used to be a firefighter, New York firefighter. And when he was in town when 9/11 struck, and he went out and he helped the firefighters. So that was pretty cool.
And he refuses to get his teeth fixed because he said that's his personality. You know how he's got like those fangs?
Yeah.
Get those fixed, you know?
But he's a brilliant actor.
Oh, he's brilliant at everything.
Totally. Yeah, he's brilliant at everything. But he played the guy in Boardwalk Empire. He played the corrupt. Treasurer.
Absolutely.
Controller.
And then, of course, for all time, you know, shut the fuck up, Donnie. Donnie. Steve Buscemi is Donnie in.
Right.
Big Lebowski.
the mask? Yeah, Coen Brothers. Right. They love those character actors. They do. In fact, The Adventures of Buster Scruggs, it's a bunch of spaghetti westerns. There's five of them.
That's a good one.
Yeah, we enjoyed that.
Watch the first two and then turn it. I didn't like it when it started with the guy with no legs and arms. Once that started, it went totally downhill.
Oh, no, I liked the whole thing. And the ending, and then the ending leaves you going, huh, what?
I love the first two. The first two, with the one with Steven Root.
Hold on though. You didn't like the vignette with Tom Waits.
And maybe I need to rewatch it.
That was brilliant.
Maybe Tom, I wasn't in the right frame of mind.
That was just about to say that. But the best thing about that Tom Waits is when he takes he wants to take the legs from the owl. He decides to leave two and just take one.
But the first two were just, you know, gut busting laughter. Yeah. And then I don't know what happened.
Yeah.
They changed gears. Maybe, I don't know.
Well, they're just different stories. I mean, yeah, in the first vignette, I should have seen that coming.
Yeah, wouldn't that hilarious?
Yeah, that's right. I forget that actor's name.
Well, hey,
Rip, he was that old brother. Where art thou?
Yeah,
Coen Brothers
was great in that.
For everything, yeah.
He was brilliant in that.
By the way, Kitty,
that's a good film.
Kitty in Boston says I loved the death of Stalin. So that's a pretty resounding pretty resounding endorsement. Kitty, by the way, yesterday told me that she actually missed. The Christmas on the Front Porch episode. She said, I didn't get a chance to tune in Christmas night because I decided that after spending time with my family, I needed some cheering up. So get this. This is what you get when you live in civilization. I needed some cheering up, so I went to a Buster Keaton triple feature at a great old indie movie house in Cambridge, The Brattle. Lots of fun.
Nice. Oh,
cool.
Man.
And
how
then
cool
get
the,
get this on Sunday on That's the and cool. see to see. I already said, you know, it's a mad world is hilarious. To see it on a big screen would be grand. She said on Sunday they're showing a double feature with Mad World, and funny thing happened on the way to the Forum.
Oh, cool. Zero
That's
Mostel.
Awesome.
Zero Mostel was the big star in that one.
And then
that
we have a question from Kitty. Does anyone love Neil Simon's Murder by Death as much as I do? Best cast ever. Peter Falk, Alec Guinness, Eileen Brennan, Truman Capote, James Coco, Elsa Lanchester, David Niven, Peter Sellers, Maggie Smith, Nancy Walker, and Estelle Winwood. Class. Oh, yeah, that's a gut buster, too. Yeah.
Phenomenal.
Neil Simon.
I love David Niven. And my parents did, too.
I saw him once when I was on a plane. We were leaving Europe, and he got on the plane last minute. I saw from the back, and everybody in the regular passengers got up, and they wanted to take a peek at David Niven. And there he was.
Okay, I need some geography help here. The only Corvallis is Corvallis, Washington, right?
No, there's Corvallis, Oregon. It's Oregon.
It's Pullman,
Oregon,
Washington.
Beavers.
Yeah,
Oregon Beavers.
Pullman, Washington, Corvallis, Oregon. Yeah. Sorry. My apologies to everybody in Cascadia. Sometimes you know, it's kind of like how nobody knows there's a West Virginia. People think I live Virginia. I've got an aunt in Roanoke. You know, I get my Oregon's my places that aren't Seattle and Portland mixed up sometimes. So you know, we regret the error. So this story comes.
Well, at least you weren't asked for your passport being from New Mexico.
Oh Jesus! Yeah, I know. I saw that. That's true, Flavio. This story comes from the Corvallis Gazette Times. It's written by a reporter by the name of Bennett Hall. And, you know, this is, you can file this under truth is stranger than fiction, whatever. But since we were talking about the guy who freedom protected his leg right off, this is the story of Alana Parton, Alana Partin, P-A-R-T-I-N, who comes from a place called Sweet Home. The Oregon contingent can feel free to educate me, but, you know, damn it, I thought Sweet Home was in Alabama, but who the hell am I? Alana Partin comes from Sweet Home, and she got arrested this past November in downtown Corvallis. The cop who pulled her over it was 1:48 a.m. You know, when the police report says it starts with it was 1:48 a.m., you know it's going to be fun. The cop pulls her over at 1:48 a.m. November 7th on Northwest 3rd Street near Van Buren Avenue for what are referred to as equipment violations. That's usually, you know, tail light out, license plate,
tag light,
and tag that light. Tag light. Yeah, I got handed one of those one night. I didn't handle it at all well.
who looks back there, you know?
It, right. I mean, it's you don't get an idiot light on your dashboard, you know, hey, you're going to get pulled over by the cops at 2 o'clock in the morning because your tag light's out because they're going to use that to try to bust you for DUI.
Four times.
But anyway, the cop shows up, and Alana Partin refuses to show the cop a driver's license. She also refuses to get out of her vehicle. And that's after she's told she's under arrest. In the incident report, it says that instead of handing out a driver's license, she reached over and grabbed her handy-dandy .357 Magnum Freedom Protector. At which point, and, you know, this, you know, she's a white lady, okay? So the cop then pulled out his stun gun and incapacitated her with her stun gun instead of just blowing her the hell away. And took her into custody.
Gentlemen.
Also, also in the vehicle with her was an AR-15 Freedom Protector that just curiously didn't have a serial number.
Oh, factory mistake, oh. I'm sure.
Yeah, you know, sometimes one just gets out. We sent a bunch of military grade weapons over to Afghanistan with Bible verses incised into the stock.
Well,
you know, just so that we could inflame the locals a little bit more, what with them not being, you know, big fans of Jesus and everything.
Jesus, you know, Bob, you know, the absence of a serial number is no different than, you know, a penny that gets pressed with two heads of Lincoln on it, okay? I mean, it happens all the time.
All the time. You know,
come on.
Yeah.
It's a common mistake. Hey, Tracy.
Stand by, because we got to get to the fun part here. Where's my Law and Order sound effect? Dum dum.
So Bob, what happened?
Well, so she gets busted, she's arrested, and then she goes into court a few days ago, and she's complaining to the judge that she was taken into custody, arrested. Now, this was the Benton County Sheriff's Office and the Corvallis Police Department, and she referred to them as privateers.
Privateers.
Yes.
Huh.
What the fuck does that even mean?
Well,
it's kind of an admiralty term, I believe.
Well, it refers to people who are, it's a seafaring term that referred to ships that operated under what were called letters of marque, and they were basically state-sanctioned pirates. Sir Francis Drake, for instance, at one point was a privateer, a state-sanctioned pirate on the part of merry old England.
Yeah. Mercenaries, we call them nowadays.
But if you... if you follow the zany, wacky, madcap, dangerous world of the sovereign citizen movement.
Oh, God. She was one of those bird refuge people, huh?
I don't know that she's a Malheur one, but she's probably got a poster of, I don't know, she's probably got one of those, one of those beefcake posters of what's his name? Cloven Bundy.
Cloven, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And so when she was brought into court to answer the charges, instead, she demanded immediately that the court return her guns and pay her $1,500 per firearm per day for loss of use. She then said that if her demands are not met, she's entitled to compensation.
How
did
that go,
Bob?
Huh?
What do you think, John?
Yeah. Well, but wait.
Opportunity cost.
Wait.
She needed slapping lock.
No, this is again Ginsu.
Like a prepper.
This is a Ginsu commercial.
Like a bomb shelter.
Yeah.
Now, hold on.
Hold on.
This is a Ginsu commercial. You know. But wait, there's more.
These people, they make preparations. They get the AR-15. They get all the gear. And who are you going to shoot?
So did she get her guns back, Bob?
Well, that's what I keep trying to say. There's more. There's more. If her demands are not met,
I had too much dinner. Is that Tracy out there?
That's Tracy.
It would be me.
If her demands are not met, Parton says she is entitled to compensation, quote, of not less than $100 trillion paid in lawful currency pursuant to 12 U.S.C. 411. She stood there and put up a bunch of that sovereign citizen bullshit to the test in a courtroom, and the judge said, "This court does not recognize the legal gibberish you're putting forward. My advice to you would be to be represented by an attorney. I believe it would be a grievous error for you to try to go forward with these legal theories that have no basis in law." But she still rejected a public defender, but said she would let a lawyer sit next to her and give her advice on her own terms. We think the Cletuses, the Cleti Collective down south, you know, shooting up lawnmowers are nuts. Well, out west, you got to deal with the sovereign citizen Lulus. And I will only say, and she stood there and argued with the judge and called him, "You're nothing more than a vessel of commerce." None of these things actually exist in her own brain. They've merely been sort of injected into her vocabulary by time spent watching YouTube Lulus from the Sovereign Citizen Movement. The news report is amazing. When her name was called, she approached the low wooden bar that separates the gallery from the attorney's tables and the judge's bench, but refused to cross it. Instead, she demanded that Williams produce documents establishing his authorities. "I reserve all rights," Parton said. "I need to make sure this court is in order before I cross the bar." The charges for the 38-year-old woman include being a felon in possession of a firearm, interfering with a peace officer, and failure to carry or present a driver's license. Jesus. This link comes from the DemocratHerald.com. DemocratHerald.com, and I don't want to be accused of this shaming or that shaming, but this is a sovereign citizen, so I think we can have as much fun as we want to, really. And I would just urge you to go and find a photograph of the defendant. Arnold, by the way, points out, the sovereign citizen people are a real problem. It's unbelievable how dangerous stupid people are. What you're telling us all is exactly on a YouTube video, she's acting exactly as she was instructed to. Yeah. Oh, by the way, going back to Hodorowski, our buddy Reverbo, the human boy, tells us, Dolly demanded $100,000 an hour for Dune. Just one of many problems with getting that little film made. Yeah, I know. Hey, Tracy, welcome in. What the hell happened? Where'd you go? Hold on. Just a minute. I've never been thrown off the front porch before. And what's this, Brother Deacon Asa says? Okay. All right, I'll probably screw all this up, but let's see what we... All right, am I back?
Yeah,
oh, you're back.
I got you back, Bob. We missed
thank me.
You were sorely missed, friend.
What the actual hell happened there?
I don't know. We missed the end of your story. Did you get your guns back, Bob?
No, she didn't. She did not get her guns back, mercifully.
Ah, damn it!
Did she get the money? $100
She didn't get her $100 trillion either.
Aww.
What happened to her?
Damn it!
You know, but remember, she wanted it in appropriate currency, so I think the judge should have just reached down under his bench and pulled out a big bag of Monopoly money and go, here you go, honey.
Knock yourself out, baby. Go to bed.
Or better yet, the money from the Game of Life, an antique one that still had Art Linkletter's. Hey, look. Yeah, here's $1,000 bill. It's, you know it's real because it's got a picture of G.I. Love Money on it.
G.I. Love Money.
Art Linkletter.
What more do you
need? Didn't old Art's daughter fly off a building thinking she was Superman on LSD or something? Or am I?
Yeah. Well, I mean, she fell out a window or something.
Okay.
Let's see. Maurice LaMarche and Rob Paulson are the voices of Pinky and the Brain. Thank you, Mark, in Florida. Thank you very kindly.
Hey, Bob, I really enjoyed your conversation yesterday.
Oh, with Dan?
Yeah, that was awesome.
Dan's just awesome. He's a delight to talk with, and he has an encyclopedic level of knowledge, and he has fun along the way.
And to have an inside track on a medium that I have been in love with ever since I've been old enough to comprehend thought is just, I don't know, awesome. I mean, I'm grasping for words here.
No, when he's like, was she kidding when we're talking about? I said, don't tell me how to look for black people in the movies, Bob. He sounded scared, like, oh God, did I offend him? He's like, you're like, no, this is a joke, it's a running joke, don't worry. He actually sounded nervous. I'm like, oh, poor thing.
Well, no. You actually brought up a valid point, and I was trying to rewind my head and think, you know, beyond Sidney Poitier, you know, who was there?
Nobody. I mean, you had, you know, early movies with Paul Robeson, but you know, he was, you know, everybody considered him a communist, so. His career, you know, was dead in the water. So there was nothing. I mean, you know, so I mean, as far as your black, you know, male, you know, superstars is, you know, Sidney Poitier. That was the 60s and the 70s, 50s.
How
about, let's see.
Belafonte.
He wasn't in the movies as much as Sidney Poitier was.
Right.
And then you didn't get anybody. That was considered a superstar until Denzel Washington.
And there was back in the day, there was a feature, a feature film that had Lena Horne and Bill Bojangles Robinson in it.
Right, Stormy Weather.
But I have... I went looking around after our conversation, Tracy, and I told you last night, I didn't send it along just because I didn't want to offend. But God, I found a picture And a lot of places you'll see it, they cut it out now, of the scene. It's a production number of a song called Abraham.
Free in the Darkest.
Yes. It's an Irving Berlin song in which Irving Berlin included the line, Abraham freed the darkies. And it is performed in the movie Holiday Inn, which is where we first get White Christmas from. It's performed by Bing Crosby in blackface.
Awesome.
And I found a picture of it, and I didn't send it along, Tracy, because I just didn't want you having
I was gonna look for it because I think I would have posted it on Facebook
personally. I didn't want you having like a 10 p.m. Pacific Standard Time aneurysm or anything.
No, actually. You know, it's so funny because
we're getting too old for this, Tracy. Come on.
No, last night after because I was working the airport and I had like pretty much the worst day. It was like everybody that was messing. It was like I got the worst rides. And two rides to El Segundo from LAX, and anybody that knows LA is like, oh my god, two rides.
Every Archie Bunker from LAX was in your cab last night.
No,
huh?
Well, I had Arians in my car. It was just
All right, well, Tracy, check your instant messages. I just sent you Bing in blackface.
Awesome. No, but I thought.
But what's really cool is all the other white guys in the band behind him also in blackface.
Remember when I was telling you the other night when I said I was watching the whitest movie ever, and you guessed White Christmas? Right after I finished talking to you, they had a bit that they were doing, and it was they had the chalkboard going minstrel show, and I'm like, no, but nobody was in blackface. Because I'm like, there's no way they're gonna show a bunch of people in blackface, but fortunately they weren't really. It wasn't really just a minstrel. It wasn't really minstrelly. Actually, it wasn't that bad. But I panicked. I'm like, no, please God, Jesus, no, please, I cannot. Cannot see. I wouldn't have really cared about being Crosby. It's just if it had been Danny Kaye, I just would have just died because. I have a special place in my heart for Danny Kaye, but there was no blackface. They were dressed up, but like I said, it didn't really seem like a minstrel show. It was just a bunch of white people singing. But I'm like, oh, please, Jesus, no, please, Jesus, I can't, I just can't. But
well,
then
the same blog post where I found the screen cap of Bing Crosby in blackface, I also found. Fred Astaire in blackface doing Bill Bojangles Robinson.
No. Dueling? Great.
No, not dueling. Doing. Mimicking.
Doing. Mimicking Bill.
Yeah, that I've seen that, Bob.
What movie was that in?
I don't know offhand. It was just a sort of by the way there.
Oh God!
It wasn't Holiday Inn.
No, it wasn't.
No. God, that is just that is that you know, when we talk about blackface, and when people like Megyn Kelly act like I don't understand why there's a problem, I'm like, bitch, please. It's just you know it's a problem. And
she'll never understand. Just like I'll never understand, Tracy.
No, no, no. It's not that she doesn't. You don't have to understand. You just have to know.
But I get it. You know.
You just have to know it's wrong, and it's offensive, and it's racist. Yeah. And anybody that has been born in the last 20, been around just the last 20 years knows it's wrong. But people, are so comfortable in their privilege that they're like, it's like the same people. You know, like the whole bullshit thing of the war on Christmas. It's like, I don't see why somebody should be offended if I say Merry Christmas to you. It's not that you're offending me. That is not the issue. The issue is that, you think everything revolves around you and your whiteness and your privilege and your holiday. You know, I was years back when this whole thing, about happy holidays and stuff like that. It took me back to when I was a kid, when everything was, you know, was actually called Easter break and Christmas break. And I was thinking about during the Christmas program, and we were singing all these Christmas songs. And then when I was older, I'm like, well, what about the Jewish kids? What about the Muslim kids? I mean, you know, you're sitting here having to sing Christmas songs, and it has nothing to do with who you are or your religion or your culture or anything. But because this is the dominant culture, you are forced to sing these songs. And if that's not, you know, I don't understand why people feel that, you know, that there's a war on Christmas. I said, Bob, on Christmas Day, happy non-denominational holiday?
Exactly.
And I'm like, look, I just declared war on Christmas. Look, I'm a Christian. And, I say happy holidays. I very rarely say Merry Christmas unless I know I'm saying Merry Christmas to someone who actually celebrates Christmas.
Hell, I'm an atheist. I say Merry Christmas to people.
You know? It's like,
I also spend that money that says in God we trust.
Or anybody that's ever been to a Kresge counter 30, 40 years ago and wonder why they couldn't sit next to their favorite teacher and had to ask their mom, what's going on here? You know, you will get it. It'll start to make sense.
Okay, here's an aside, not an aside, but a little follow-up to the topic. Ron in Raleigh says, you forget most of the black actors in the 40s forward were ex-athletes. Woody Strode had a career from 1941 till the 1990s. Jim Brown, Bernie Casey, Fred Williamson, Richard Roundtree, he was a model, all were leading men in various movies. Woody Strode was best known for the part he played in Spartacus.
Yeah. But they didn't. They weren't. I mean, yeah, when you think of those movies, like you said, but they were. I'm not forgetting about them. I'm just talking about, because of course I know who all they are, you know, and like, you know, blaxploitation movies, Richard Roundtree, like you said, model, sure. And, you know, but they never got the due that
broke
they,
out.
They deserved.
Yeah. Right.
They never right. broke out. They were not breakout actors.
You're talking mainstream, correct?
Right. I'm talking, you know, mainstream. And what kills me is like how many years between Sidney Poitier getting his Oscar before Denzel got his Oscar for Best Actor. And then on top of the fact that his first Oscar was for Glory when he played a slave, and his second Oscar is for when he played a corrupt cop. Gee, really? But when Whoopi Goldberg got her Oscar, not for the movie that she deserved the Oscar for, The Color Purple, but for playing a con woman. Come on.
What, in Ghost?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
By the way, you got a shout out from Monique Tracy. Yay, Tracy! Happy New Year. The Kincaid call. The Kincaid call out works.
Well, I think it's a fair statement.
We summoned you.
We all love Tracy.
The word we use here, John, is conjured.
Conjure.
Well, there you go. That's what I meant. Yeah.
Because I am a witch, and therefore.
I just said, Tracy, please call in. Please.
That's so funny. It was so funny because I wasn't even listening to the show. Like I said, I have had my ass firmly planted on this couch all day. But, you know, let me see who else, you know, when I think about, you know, listening to Dan and talking, you know, when he was talking about representation and diversity. I mean, as much as I love the movie, now, acting was never something that I would have done because I'm not, you know, I'm not talented in that way. But it never would have dawned on me to even think about, you know, doing stuff behind the scenes because that's not something that was even, you know, in my purview. It's, you know, it's not like there's something that we talk about that, you know, that Black women or people of color were encouraged to do. And, you know, I just think about the fact that, you know, as much as I love movies and I would have loved to have been in the background of doing stuff, but it's not something that, you know, I would have ever thought about doing.
Well, you know, I'm eager for our next conversation with Dan because, you know, he just dropped something along the way last night in which he said, when I was working on Men in Black and my pink little ears perked right up, I want to know everything about that.
I know you did because you got your whole, I think you stopped breathing for a second. You like, wait, what?
Yeah, I mean, I and see, the thing is, Dan was props on that movie, which means he has probably held in his hand a neuralizer, you know, the flashy thingy.
Oh.
Get your hands on one of them.
I thought about you last night when I got home, because I actually finally got a decent ride last night, and it worked out perfectly because I was having a shitty day. And my last ride actually took me from the airport to Calabasas. I'm like, oh, thank God. That means I get to go home. But anyway, I was hungry, and I stopped at this ramen place in Encino. I'm like, this is somewhere that Bob would love.
Yes.
But then
I was about to say, ooh, ramen place. Yeah.
Ooh. And they stay open until 11, and they have all these wonderful different flavors.
Oh, yes. With the pork. Have you had it with the pork belly? Tell me you've had it with the grilled pork belly.
No, I'll try that next time.
You must.
I will try it with the pork, the grilled pork belly, because they did have it with the grilled pork belly. But I got to thinking about your conversation and talking about movies and stuff like that. Did you guys talk about Star Trek last night?
Not really. No.
Okay. Well, I don't know what made me think about Star. So I get home, and I'm going through the Netflix thing, because I'm like, I don't know what I was trying to watch. I was going to watch Law and Order, but Jan was watching it to the Hulu in the bedroom. So for whatever the reason, I guess they changed it, because you used to be able to watch more than Hulu on two or screens at the same time. And now that they've changed their billing thing, you can't. But anyway, so I'm like, okay, well, I got y'all watch Netflix. And I'm scrolling around trying to find something to watch. And I found this wonderful documentary. And it made me think of you again. I'm like, get out of my head, Bob, because it was the obligatory Star Trek reference. It was, have anybody watched or heard of For the Love of Spock?
Yes, I've heard of it. I have not seen it.
Oh, Bob. Okay, since you are, I know, a Star Trek geek, this is a must-see because it's a documentary written and directed by Leonard Nimoy's son.
Right, yeah.
And they did it in honor of they were doing it in honor of the 50th anniversary of Star Trek. And when he asked his dad was of course on board, but of course before they finished the documentary, he passed away. But it's so good. I'm not a Trekkie per se. I love Star Trek. I grew up watching it. I have the fond thing because it premiered the year that I was born. So there's this whole thing about it. And, the diversity of the cast and all that. But to watch it, watch this documentary gave me, I knew Leonard Nimoy was a pretty cool guy. But watching this show, this documentary, I'm like, yeah, I gotta tell Bob about this. You know, 20 feet from. Have you watched the 20 feet from Stardom yet?
Yeah, that was amazing.
Wasn't that amazing? Well, you must, because you'll enjoy even more than I did because I know how you feel about Star Trek. But and then after
For the Love of Spock, 2016, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, it's only 2 years ago. Yeah.
Yeah. Cause
so he had passed away already.
He died in 2015.
Okay, I gotta watch that. Thank you, Tracy.
Yeah, it's great. It was, I really enjoyed it, and a lot of it, and it made me smile. But the frankness that his son talked about their relationship and how they had issues for years because I guess Leonard Nimoy had issues with alcohol. And his son had issues with drugs, and so they were, recovery and the whole thing. I mean, you find out stuff about him that you didn't even know. Go ahead.
It transcends ignorance.
Mm-hmm.
It really does.
Oh, by the way, Tracy, into the list of actors of color who got their awards for playing sketchy characters, Monique reminds us Halle Berry got hers playing a whore.
Yeah, for playing a hooker, a whore, straight up, you know, being screwed on screen by, of all white men, Billy Bob Thornton. Come on.
Oh, my God.
And Ron just enlightened me. I've got another West Virginian to be proud of. Bernie Casey, born June 8th, 1939 in Wyco, West Virginia.
Get out of here. I love Bernie Casey. Casey was the man.
My God, you know, it was a lighthearted comedy and everything, but there was genius involved in the production of Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure.
Yes, there was. Yes, there was. You know, I hate to admit that I liked the movie, but you know, it's one of those things that it's like that's what I get. See, I have a list of movies that is like this is what I get for hanging out with white people list, and
we're a part of your tribe, Tracy. You got to accept this, man.
You know, and it's like because I'm like
we've made major contributions to your culture, like mayonnaise,
right,
Tracy.
Mayonnaise, right?
Exactly. Okay, 8:21 p.m. Who had 8:21 for the first mayonnaise reference with Tracy? Damn it, Gerald.
No, it's so you know, it's there's certain movies that I'm like, if I was a real black person, there's no fucking way I should like this movie. But you know, it's not so much a real black person, but raised, you know, in certain parts of my city. But it was just like, you know, Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure, Valley Girl, Fast Times at Ridgemont High, what else? There's just, you know, movies that I just really shouldn't like as a black person. Where's My Car?
Tracy, may I add, there will never be a Catwoman even come close to Eartha Kitt.
No.
Oh, my God. Robert in Australia just sent me several more screen caps from Holiday Inn.
Oh, no.
It gets worse. Because it wasn't just the band in blackface. It wasn't just Bing Crosby in blackface. It was his leading lady in blackface. Complete with, like, the hair.
Even the hair? Did she have the pick in any hair?
Yes.
Well, wasn't the first talk...
And there's and there's a steamboat on the set in the back.
Oh, no.
It's so funny. When I went to Louisiana, we were going to go on a steamboat, and I'm like, I can't. I can't. It's just certain things that it's like.
Okay, hey, since we've gone, and this sounds wrong the way I'm putting it. I don't mean it to sound wrong, but since we've gone down this road, you know, I read esoteric things.
Yes, you do.
And, for instance, it was a few weeks back, John was on here, and lo and behold, I had the Travis McGee book that was written, and I read the segments, and it was like, and John was like, oh, yeah, right there. I know exactly what you're talking about. I know exactly where he's writing about. Remember, John?
Yes, sir, I do.
Well, yes, so, there's this, and I love, you know how I am with history. It's pretty hopeless. But there's a and it's free. You can get it on your Kindle or your Kindle Reader or whatever, and it has a certain value. Okay, this is the setup. The first capital of the state of Alabama was called Cahaba. The first permanent capital of the state of Alabama. Alabama became a state in 1819. And down south in what's called the Black Belt, it's a reference to the soil, the little Cahaba River empties into the Alabama River. It is beautiful. the area that's called Short Grass Prairie down there, and it's extraordinarily beautiful country. And the first capital at Cahaba was abandoned eventually because it flooded. They literally had to row members of the legislature out the second story windows of the state capitol when it flooded. And I guess it was a little malarial and whatnot, but it was the South, so it all was. Bear with me. So a woman late in her age named Anna M. Gale, and to this day, I mean, Cahaba is an eerie place to go because it's just gone. The streets are still laid out. There are ruins of houses, a few columns sticking up, but it is gone. And it was a vibrant community for nearly 100 years, even after they took the state capital away, because being there on the Alabama River, it was like the furthest port north of Mobile. And you're going to have to put up with a little reading from me here, but I think by the time I'm done, you will you'll know why I'm sharing. Because she knew everybody she's writing about, this old lady. And they're all gone. And she talks about the locations of the various plantation homes and whatnot. And she also offers commentary along the way about the pre-Civil War South. And we stopped watching whatever it was we were watching last night, and I looked at Agnes and I said, I got to read this to you. And I did, and slowly, and if Agnes is just on the other wall, she'd confirm. After a while, she was just sitting there looking at me with her mouth kind of hanging opener and opener and open, just sort of unbelieving, because it, just like this scene from Holiday Inn, we're not accustomed to this, but this is actual history. It has value. So, she's talking.
What year was it written, Bob?
Maybe 1916, something like that.
Okay.
And she's writing about the social scene amongst all the plantations. And please pardon me, my old Southern lady voice. wait a minute. Let me see if I can make this better. Hold on. It'll just take a second. Because I think if I do this, it will be much better. Oh, for pity's sakes.
We're all waiting with bated breath.
Well, yes, and I'm sorry for the delay.
West Virginia's getting their ass kicked. It's 33-18.
Oh God, I just see. Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't expect. I didn't expect any different. I really didn't.
West Virginia has a tough time in bowl games anyway without Will Greer playing, right?
Yeah, boy, I tell you what, he was a loyal Mountaineer, wasn't he?
Boy, yeah, he took one for the team, or the team took one for him, I guess.
Right. Okay. So here we go. I think I'm ready. Into these country homes, visitors would come in crowds, and they were expected to remain as long as they felt inclined. Everything was done to contribute to their pleasure and amusement, and each person was made to feel that he or she conferred an honor in accepting the extended hospitality. Gentlemen would arrive on horseback, and the ladies in carriages, not open or covered buggies or one-horse vehicles, but closed family carriages, such as were used by the English nobility at their country seats, drawn by well-trained carriage horses or large, fine mules kept expressly for that purpose, covered with harness mounted in silver plate, a Negro driver in the coachman's box, the ladies' waiting maid beside him, and a Negro boy occupying the little seat behind as footman. Servants waited to open the large entrance gate and take charge of the horses, and after a cordial welcome, the guests were made to feel unconstrained and allowed to seek their own way of entertaining themselves. The gentlemen were shown the growing crops on the plantation by their host, or taken out to hunt, armed with the finest guns, or with the hounds on a fox chase. The rest of the time was devoted to the ladies, who, with their small jeweled hands, soft and white, and tastefully dressed in the fashion of the day, wide flowing robes, large hoops, thread lace scarves, handsome jewelry of cameo or coral, and smooth, beautifully braided hair, which it required a full hour for a maid to arrange, spent the morning hours of summer in reading, conversation, or fine needlework. After the midday nap, the afternoons were passed in visiting, riding, or driving, and the evening was given up to music and dancing until, exhausted with the mere pleasure of living, one sought rest and slumber in the sensuous delight of linen sheets, lavender-scented, or in winter found unspeakable comfort in the soft, downy feather beds of the high, old-fashioned canopy-top bedsteads, to sink in to sleep in the golden glow of the hickory logs and awaken in the morning with a maid standing at the bedside with a cup of fragrant coffee. There was no hurry, no special labor was pressing, none were in haste to leave. The climate, the great abundance, the warm-hearted hospitality made existence in any of these homes an unceasing delight. It was the charmed land of the lotus eaters, where life seemed one long, sweet dream of pleasure. Back on the Cahaba River was the home of J.B. Gill, another comfortable country place surrounded by fertile lands. On and on and on and on, yada, 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 yada. Adjoining that, these places was the plantation of Reese D. Gale, another valuable estate with its 200 slaves and rich, fertile lands. In all the South, there could not have been found a more beautiful and prosperous and self-sustaining country than was here. At which point, I turned to Agnes and I said, self-sustaining, you say? Because I'm not hearing a lot of self-sustaining going on by them white folks. No.
Self-sustaining.
Yeah. Oh, but it, you know, she's ignorant. She's a product of her time. But the thing is, there were other people who were products of the same time who goddamn well knew better. All those lovely things of careless pleasure. Well, you know what? What time do you have to get up in the morning to get the coffee hot so you can be waiting for the little missus when she opens her tender white little eyeballs?
And it's not like they had a microwave to heat shit up, you know?
No, hell no.
I mean, we didn't have gas ranges and stuff like that. Motherfuckers had to get wood, chop wood and all that shit.
Right, and I warrant there wasn't any soft and succulent feather beds for the folks that were doing the actual damn work.
Wouldn't you like to hear the story that somebody would write from the other side?
Well, it's kind of here, John. Interesting you should ask. Yeah. Now, there's a, let's see, there's a reference there. Let me get the music helps, doesn't it?
Yeah, the music was perfect.
Yeah.
Yeah, your voice too, Bob. I was just thinking about coming to Corton.
I was dying.
Oh, Mr. John, I think I've got the vapors. let's see. A more beautiful and prosperous and self-sustaining country than was here. Plantations in splendid condition, droves of fat horses and mules, herds of cattle, flocks of sheep, goats, and droves of hogs, the slaves happy and contented with a magnificent prospect of fine crops, vast fields of waving corn, luxuriant oats, yada, 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 yada. And then, wait. But alas, in May, the surrender came, and ruin followed.
Ruin.
The Negroes, elated with freedom, abandoned their homes, left their houses, the household goods and clothing, all but what they wore, and flocked to the Yankee camp to become pensioners of the government and spend their time in idleness while the plantations grew up in weeds. Yep, because Whitey wasn't doing any of the damn work. That's why they grew up in weeds. Get on out there, old Mars. Grab that hoe. Get down. But you, now, see, there's a reason I mention this, and I hope this is not hateful and painful, because it's history, and it deserves to be analyzed. And she is so clueless that she doesn't realize that there. I mean, a plantation with 200 people held in bondage. And it's just, well, it's just marvelous. And it never dawns on her that somebody's salting and curing them hams. Mm-hmm. And that corn is brought in by people.
The happy Negroes, that's...
Oof. Oh, yeah, and that's not the only, only happy slave reference in this book.
Well, what was that movie, Jezebel, with Betty Davis, when she gets upset and she calls all a little cheering, come sing me a song, and they all, you know, they all run around and they start singing and, you know, and playing the banjo, and I'm sitting there like,
But see, Granny here, there's, like I said, there's value in this, because that line about, and flock to the Yankee camp to become pensioners of the government and spend their time in idleness, that you can turn on White Wing radio anywhere in this country today, and, well, hey, maybe they'll play a clip of Paul Ryan from Wisconsin, say, or some other godforsaken fucking Republican, talking about how the welfare makes people lazy and lay around in their dependency hammocks, and they ain't engaged in freedom and ain't got no liberty no more. Sit, liberty, sit.
Yeah.
And so, so there we are. The plantation grows up in weeds. Plows lay idle where they had been abandoned in the fields, and stock were left to graze in the pastures. On my father's plantation alone, 800 hogs were turned out to go wild in the swamp because there was no one to feed and care for them. Yeah, on her father's plantation alone, it never dawned on him that those hogs that he'd been using to eat could still be eaten, and mm-hmm. that maybe a better arrangement could be reached. And now we get to the part that's actually halfway enjoyable. The question now arose how to get the growing crops harvested. Because old white man getting out there and working by the sweat of his brow was not in the equation. My father concluded he would go to Selma and offer his Negroes, they're still his Negroes, you see, one half of the crop to return home and gather it. Well, time the fuck out. Did you hear what that is? He's offering sharecropping. Yep. You do all the work, you get half the stuff.
What's wrong with that?
And half, when he was lucky.
If he was lucky, and how much did he owe for the seed, the equipment?
That's right.
And you can damn well bet there'd be a thumb on the scales.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, sir. They used the same method up there in West Virginia in the coal mines, didn't they?
Yeah, pretty much.
Company store.
Yep, absolutely. Well, let's see.
We're baby.
Yeah, we're gonna subtract your pick, your lunch bucket, your lamp, your helmet, your battery, or your carbide. Your rent, your bolt of cloth that your wife's making the clothing for the little ones. Hey, look, you ain't got no payday.
You better get to work. Make
what
some
is
more
that?
Money.
I owe my soul to the company store.
That's it, baby.
Exactly.
Yep, 16 tons.
So, old Mars thinks he's got a grand idea. You know, we're going to share a crop. But the thing is, it never dawns on him, hey, I'll pay you a wage.
No, not back in that day.
Because the fact of the matter is, he was probably, he spent his entire life, you know, just like Jefferson died a pauper, he spent his entire life in debt. and couldn't scrape to, and it's part, it couldn't scrape together two pennies to rub together if it came right down to it, because it was all just it was all a commodity debt economy. So let's see, here we go. He's going to go offer sharecropping, right? As he rode into the camp, the first person he spied was an old woman named Patty, one of his slaves inherited from his mother. You know, because you can inherit human beings.
You can inherit, you know, people.
Yeah. And the one of all others who expressed the greatest devotion to her young master, as she called him. For years, half bent with rheumatism. Because, see, Granny here, Granny's been all sweet, all tea cakes and ices so far. But Granny's harboring some serious fucking racism and resentment.
Yeah.
Okay? And it's gonna sneak out now. For years, half-bent with rheumatiz, Patty had not known work and went hobbling around on a stick. But lo, freedom had worked a marvelous change. Now, with head erect, she was stepping around as agile and spry as a young girl that had never known an ache or pain. Her master called to her. Because, see, he's still her master.
Yeah. Mm.
Called to her. Come here, Patty. I want to speak to you. She turned, saw who it was, and flounced off, exclaiming, Lord of mercy, child, I ain't got time to fool with you now. Go, Patty, go!
I ain't got time for you, boy.
This was a novel experience to my father, the first time in his life a Negro had ever refused to come at his bidding. Oh, the poor aching thing, the privilege, the suffering privilege, and to be answered in this offhand manner, especially by one of his old slaves, was too much to be borne.
Too much, too much.
And now she waxes poetic. A sad and fearful change has swept over this country, and though the harvest moon shines with the same old splendor, our lands lie barren and bare, and the cheerful song of the old-time slave no longer resounds on the air. No longer the ring of the axe is heard, nor the corn song over the hill. The banjo is silent, the dance is done. Its music forever is still. The sound of the horn is heard no more. Well, by God, the horn came back, didn't it?
The horn came back. Horn loud and clear here.
Nor the neigh of the hunter's steed, nor the yelp of the fox, nor the bay of the hounds resounding over the mead. The planter has gone with his lordly grace. His home is in alien hands. Aliens.
Alien?
His children are ruined, dead, or lost, or struggling in foreign lands. And see, the thing is, it never dawns on Granny that this was all shit they brought on themselves. That wasn't no Yankees firing on Charleston from Fort Sumter. The slavery could have been ended peacefully, you know, like with wages. But the fact of the matter was, they were way too high up on the hog and way too enjoying all that free labor they were stealing to ever even consider doing things the way the rest of the country did it. Got it. I mean, you just kind of want to dig up old grandma and have a little chat with her. But anyway, we're not done with the poem yet. The planter has gone with his lordly grace. His home is in alien hands. His children are ruined, dead, or lost, or struggling in foreign lands. And that, hey, Flavio, you know who she's talking about, don't you?
Brazil.
Bingo! Struggling in foreign lands. And also, one of my ancestors, who was so pissed off he left America and went off to work for the 32nd degree noble Turk in Egypt and died there. But anyway.
Don't forget Walker in Nicaragua.
Yeah.
Tried to set up a slave republic there.
Yep, so them some struggling in foreign lands and being eaten by anacondas and shit. His house is left deserted and lone. All have gone away, and its fallen roof and crumbling walls
are fast falling to decay. The door stands open, gaping wide, creaking on one hinge,
because white folks couldn't fix a fucking hinge.
And the ghosts of former wealth and pride are all who now come in, save here and there some lone old home, heir to a sadder fate, with rough, rude Negroes, former slaves, inhabiting its rooms of state. Not a mark is left of the former glory of this land in its beauty and pride. Not a soul is left to tell the story. They have all passed away and died.
And you wonder why we got the problems today that we got today.
Well, I was going to say, Bob, they didn't all die. Some of them are still living down there.
Yeah, some of them been told the story to their babies, and their babies told their babies, and their babies told their babies, and now they listen to right-wing talk radio and vote for Trump.
That's it, baby. It's the same one. They feel superior, you know, in the same way. They feel that they are entitled because of the color of their skin, you know. And that is fed down the line, just like you said, mother, child, father, son, all the way down the line till you get right here to 2018, fixing to be 19, and we're still fighting that.
Well, insane bullshit. Bob, yep. Was that read by Shubbifoot?
No, that was...
That was a well read, Bob.
Oh, well, thank you. Thank you very kindly.
That was excellent. May I make a comment that sense of entitlement... was evident in the elections in Brazil recently, and in the lead up to, you know, the elections, the overthrow of the female president, because in slavocrat societies like Brazil or the United States, that sense of entitlement lives on, right? And so whenever minorities are given any rights whatsoever, you know, there's a sense of just intense resentment. You know, I was reading stories of people being horrified that, you know, now their maids are, you know, taking plane rides, you know, because they can go to college and shit, you know, and get an education and are required by law to be paid a salary. Okay, not just, you know, held in debt servitude or, you know, indentured servitude, and that's part of the revolt, I think, in Brazil. It wasn't just bus fares, okay, as they were reporting here. It was all the progress of the Workers' Party that, you know, got all these rights to the lower classes, and, you know.
Well, yeah, and I, like I said, I have a fascination with this history, not because I get all weepy for the glory days of the Old South, because my people never participated in that. We've been hillbillies scratching it out of the dirt all along.
Mm-hmm. My people showed up too late.
But it is, if you, and like I said, you can download this for free. It's called Memories of Old Cahaba, and the formatting's not very good. But when you, she name checks everybody and tells stories of, you know, violence and whatnot that went on in old Cahaba. But it's obvious that she and the people there, were terribly, terribly proud of the community that they didn't build. And in fact, in Cahaba there, and this is, I mean, you want to talk about a movie to be made? You could make a movie out of this whole thing. But what's more, there was a prison camp in Cahaba for Union soldiers. Andersonville gets all the press. But after waiting to be sent home at the end of the war, a steamboat finally came down the Alabama River to pick up these Union soldiers. They were put aboard and sent, sent downriver. And not too far away, the thing blew up, and no one survived.
Oh boy!
So after years of sitting in a Confederate hellhole prison camp, those boys excited to finally be going home, the ones that survived the disease and the brutality, were killed.
That was just a mysterious explosion, right?
Yeah, right. But to be fair, steamboats did just mysteriously explode, because that whole business of running boilers under extreme pressure on a thing, on a platform floating in the water, sometimes it just didn't work out. But there's a value to this, as ugly as it may be. As ugly as the history may be, there's a value to knowing the history.
The word is insight. It gives you an insight into the mindset of the people, and that's precious.
It's not just insight; it's current sight. We still have folks in Guantanamo that's never been charged with a fucking thing that are dying of old age. That Pappy Bush doing there. I mean, what the fuck are we doing, man? It's just wrong. There's no due process anymore. And we're paying for this out of our tax dollars, you know? It's being done in our name. So, I don't know. I get so frustrated over this. I don't know of an answer. Do we withhold our taxes?
Good luck with that.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Good luck with that. But it's still being done in their name. We're being extorted to torture could-be innocent people.
And throwing children in cages, yeah.
Right, right. And it escalates. Exactly, friend. It escalates.
Yeah, and what's the
next? We have got to change direction. We have got to.
Well, my idea of changing is terrible. I just think of, you know, food. As a matter of fact, Bob, I'm cutting my prime rib right now. I'm
gonna come on.
Oh, that is great, Tracy.
You just gonna go ahead and take a photo of that shit for us.
Oh no.
Hey
no.
Guys, wanna wish you all a happy 2019. Good riddance to 2018.
Oh,
and
they can have 2018.
I have to beg off. Again, happy New Year, and I'm glad to be part of the community. And let's hope next year we'll see some perp walks and maybe even a resignation.
We're glad you're here, friend. Thanks for checking in, Flavio.
I love you guys.
Hey, happy New Year, Flavio.
Happy New Year.
And hey, if we're not, if Agnes and I aren't out on New Year's Eve, by God, I'll be right here.
Awesome.
Should we do a fundraiser for getting Bob and the wonderful Viking warrior princess out on New Year's Eve, maybe?
If folks would like that, that would be wonderful.
There you go. Yeah, you really ought to, Bob. You shouldn't have to work New Year's Eve.
Mm-mm. No, don't.
That's
don't.
Take her out, man.
Well, if we can,
it's going to piss and rain here. But
there
still
may be other circumstances.
Well,
I'm going to try to take my wife out.
This is going to be
out of the front porch.
Yeah, I'm not worried about the rain so much. This is, I mean, we've got a few places here in West Virginia that are actually under roof, Steve.
Okay. Well,
And you know what? I didn't see monsoon quality rains diminishing too much from the enjoyment of the shindig in the North Georgia mountains. Did you?
No, that worked out pretty well. Actually, the rains actually offered some.
But it wasn't
character
so cold.
To it.
Oh,
and by the way, I'll be joining Tara. Our dear friend Tara Devlin on her show Saturday evening, so everybody tune in for that.
Oh, nice!
Oh, that's great.
Bob, I'm slicing a medium rare piece of prime rib just for you, okay?
Ooh, yes.
Signing out now, guys.
See you, Flavio.
I gotta fix some food myself.
Bye, Flavio.
Later, Flavio.
Bye, bye.
And Ron in Raleigh lets us know the name of that steamboat was the Sultana. And 1,700 passengers, including the Union ex-prisoners, died in the explosion.
1700.
I remember reading about that. There was something about they overloaded the ship with too many men, and it was too heavy, and the boiler system did blow. But some people suspected some kind of sabotage, or maybe it was a terrorist act. I don't know.
Well, you know, in the aftermath of the Civil War, there was no small amount of terrorism, because Cahaba is not far from Selma, Alabama. And, in fact, there's reference in there to how General Forrest came to some of the balls there in Cahaba. Nathan Bedford Forrest, the father of the Klan.
Oh, jeez.
And, Bob, I'm not saying you shouldn't go out New Year's Eve. I'm just saying here it's going to be a cold, wet rain, and I've already sold Karen on the idea of going to the nearest fireworks place and buying a big $100 box of fireworks and just letting go. So, you know.
Yeah, but won't that? But won't that?
That sounds good, Steve.
Won't that scare the living bee Jesus out of little Cletus and little Twiggy?
I'll put the thunder jackets on them. As long as I do that, they'll be fine, man. See, I've
give
got
the royal crown. They'll be fine with that as well, Steve.
I'll flavor it with some. What is that, Irish cream or something?
Well, no, you know what? I mean, you live down south where you can get RC. You can do Crown Royal with Royal Crown.
Oh. But yeah, you really should take Miss Agnes out, Bob. Sincerely.
Well, if it becomes possible, by Jove, I will.
Bob, I have a final on the game.
Oh dear God, I'm afraid to ask.
34-18 Syracuse.
Well, I kind of expected it. By the way, Dana Holgorsen was calling the plays, and he was not doing much in the way of play calling for the offensive genius that he is, because our offensive coordinator took a job as the head coach of Texas State University or some such.
Mm. Oh, yeah.
Oh, God, you guys talk about sports. Okay.
Yeah, no, let's don't say we didn't.
Don't worry, Tracy.
But
No.
I got an IRS question for Rick after hours.
Oh, okay.
I don't know how it's gonna play out. If it if we can do it, we'll do it. If we can't, we can't. But it's the high New Year's Eve is 61 degrees, the low is like 43.
Nice.
But
it's gonna
piss down the rain the whole time.
Yeah.
But 61 degree rain is manageable rain.
Yes, it is, absolutely.
That's not terrible.
They can't drop the big gold nugget outside here. And what they were going to plan on doing, they were going to have an Elvis impersonator, a Patsy Cline impersonator, and all this was supposed to be outside. But now it'd just be a bunch of wet cats out there, you know. Wouldn't be any fun. So.
Wet cats, there you go.
Yeah.
By the way, Robert tells us it's almost 100 degrees Fahrenheit here in Sydney.
Rub it in.
Yeah, they're having a terrible drought and wildfires in Australia. It's bad down there.
Oh, by the way, I've been awarded a cowbell by Monique.
Hmm.
Back during the reading, Monique said via Twitter, "Give yourself a cowbell for grab that hoe."
Grab that hoe.
Just like Donnie.
Shove a foot.
Yeah, I've been waiting for Ron and Raleigh to do it, because that's kind of his job. But yeah, that was old cousin Shelby Kincaid doing the reading here.
But that'd be a cool thing you could do. You could have like these recordings, audio tapes. Bob talks in the Civil War, and you can create your own character. Read different writers of that period.
Hey, run, old hair. If I was old hair, I'd run, too. Yeah.
Oh, that was awesome with the Yoshikan Showdown or whatever the hell that is in the background.
The Shokan Showdown.
That reminded me of the letters from the Second Civil War that you read, Bob.
Yeah, letters from...
Come on, Bob, I deserve a cowbell for that.
Yeah. Oh, you damn sure get a cowbell for that, Steve. Absolutely.
Well, have you heard Richard Pryor? Richard Pryor's stand-up when he talks about living down the street from a Klan rally? It's hilarious.
Yeah.
Oh God! Right. Well, the votes are coming in. Asa says, "Take a break, you and Agnes, Bob. It's been a long year."
Is it a money thing, Bob?
Yeah, it is. Rick, I mean, it is.
Rick pledged to 20, and I'll match his 20 if that'll get you guys out of the house in the pissing rain. You know,
it'll get us toward it'll get us toward it at the very least.
Okay, all right.
I'll throw in 20,
and I'll throw in 20 myself.
So that's 60. Right. That's 60. You're nearly there. Shit, you ought to be able to go out for $60.
Another
you guys
40
don't drink.
And have a grand old time.
Hey. You know, do like I do. For Christmas, I made homemade eggnog. With, you know, and I threw a little brandy in, and it was. I've never made eggnog before.
How'd it go?
Oh, my God. My Christmas dinner was just stupendous. Because remember, I told you that my Thanksgiving dinner was an abortion. It was horrible.
Jeez.
Oh, it was terrible.
I want to know. But wait. We got to wrap here in a minute. But I want to know, and I don't want to make anybody feel bad there at Shea Tracy or anything. But what's this about a prime rib being brought around with the barbecue sauce?
That wasn't me. My son Alex's friend. They bought a prime rib roast for Christmas like we had, and they not only did they smoke the motherfucker, they put barbecue sauce on it, Bob.
Smoking's okay.
Yeah, but barbecue sauce.
See, that's where the problems begin.
But you would really smoke a prime rib roast?
I've done it 100 times. Okay, I haven't, but I've done it. No, you put you rub it, you do whatever you want to do to it, garlic mostly, that kind of thing, you know, just to get nice and crusty on the outside. Stick that probe thermometer in, put it in the smoker, keep it at about 225 degrees till it reaches about 120 degrees inside. Then you're rocking.
Okay, well, you know, I stand corrected because I was offended by the smoking. But, you know, like I said, my Thanksgiving dinner was so horrible, it brought us all to tears. I mean, we were basically going to go get Chinese food. It was just horrible. But Christmas,
I see that in a movie somewhere or something?
Yeah, a Christmas story.
Story. Asian turkey.
You know,
I got a whole bunch of smoked turkey I can send you.
Well, we made up for it. That we had the standing rib roast, and I sent Bob a picture of that. And I made homemade cream spinach. And in the cream spinach, I used heavy cream cheese, mozzarella cheese, and Parmesan cheese.
Woo!
I made scalloped potatoes, homemade with heavy cream, butter, what else? Cheddar Jack cheese, Parmesan cheese, and that. And I did roasted Brussels sprouts with bacon.
Nice.
Ooh, get out of town with the Brussels sprouts. Yeah.
Yeah, with roasted Brussels sprouts with bacon, and we had, you know, the rolls that you cheat buy out they're in the freezer, but they rise, so they were nice and fluffy.
Oh man, Tracy, you are killing me, man.
I mean, and Jan did the homemade horseradish, and we had all Jew.
Those folks have already eaten dinner, Tracy. That's not fair. They're too full to eat again.
I'm going to go out there and look around in my kitchen and be plumb disappointed.
Well, Tracy, I just want to know, did you take a run at the rib bones?
I'm going to do that. As a matter of fact, I was going to text you because I still have rib bones. I just haven't gone to the store to get, because I used up all my cream for the when I made the scalloped potatoes and the...
Now, did you take it off in one fell swoop so you got a plate? Good.
Well, actually, I didn't... Well, here's the thing. Because remember I told you that Jan went to the store and she had one big, huge roast cut in half. And so the butcher had already taken, you know, had separated it, the bone from the rib. From the roast, so we didn't even have to do anything, you know, once we cooked it, except for just, you know, take it off. Bob, I have never, I'm standing here, like I said, I'm going to make hash tonight for dinner. Ooh. And I'm cutting up with Yukongo potatoes and onions and garlic and all that sort of stuff, because, you know.
Oh, shut up.
You are killing me.
Well, hey, while I do have you, I mean, you sent me a picture and everything, but I need a can we get a quick Kaneka report since.
Oh, yeah, yes, yes.
You were, understand, you were probably the only human being in the entire greater Los Angeles area eating Kaneka sausage at that time.
Yes, and on Christmas Eve, as a matter of fact, Christmas Eve morning, I scrambled up some eggs, made some cheese grits, had biscuits, and slightly sautéed the Kaneka sausage in the pan. Holy Mother of God.
Wasn't that delicious?
It was just the best.
Oh, did you have yours too, Rick?
Yeah, I had mine like a week before I delivered the traces.
Yeah. No, yeah. I was just like, Rick, you and I might have to go in half these and get a case or whatever, how much.
We'll have to make a run to Alabama, I think, Tracy.
It's not that serious.
Yeah, half these hell Thursdays, count me in, man.
Steve.
What kind of sausage is this?
Steve, you can just go buy it, Steve.
Okay.
You don't have to go. We're on the West Coast.
They're deprived. They live out there where they ain't got nothing but taco trucks and shrimp tacos and
concerts
and concerts and shit. They ain't got no good sausage.
We do have good sausage. There's this place in L.A. I didn't go in, but I just happened. It's like apparently some of the best homemade chicken sausage ever. And people come from all over to get this sausage. But the thing is, they say that it's going there is like, it's terrible. They have terrible customer service.
Well, see, you could set up a grill out on the sidewalk in front of them and just grill Kaneka and put them out of business in a day.
Oh, yeah.
You're right.
Yeah. Now, the Kaneka sausage, I have to say, I have never, because. Rick brought it and I put it in, and Jan looked at it, it's like, it looks emaciated. I don't think I'm going to like it. I'm like, okay, whatever, bitch. So.
Whoa, I don't want to be around when you say that. No.
No, whenever I say it, I say it under my breath. It'll be stupid. So. It's so. When I made it, she said she didn't want any, but of course I made enough that so if she wanted some, she would have some. And of course she's like, oh, that's really good. I'm like, I'm like, look, Bob and I have been friends for probably close to shit. However long I've been listening to the show, 8 years now?
Yeah, something like that.
About 8 years now. So I'm like, there is no way he would ever steer me wrong on food. He knows how important. Look, a girl, because see. If the food was bad, see, he is fortunate that he lives so far away that I can't go and, pimp slap him if the shit was terrible.
A lady cab driver's got to eat, right, Tracy?
What is it from Hollywood Hustle? Whole cakes.
Yeah, whole got to eat, too. Batty, batty, batty.
Batty, batty, batty.
Okay, so here's what we can do. I can get like a Sprinter, rent a Sprinter van. Load up drive down south, load up a bunch of Kaneka, and drive like a bat out of hell across country, and we'll shoot a hickory-smoked pork sausage version of Smokey and the Bandit, and then on the way back, I can take the northern route, stop off in Wisconsin, load up with, what's the beer? You can't get it, but in Wisconsin, and bring it back here, and it by God, I think we'll make a fortune.
You got to get cheese curds while you're there, Bob, if you're going to Wisconsin.
Well, yeah, stop in Ellsworth and load up. But it's
what are cheese curds?
It's a byproduct of the cheese making process, and there are
like
these
buttermilk.
Well, they're like little irregular hunks of sort of cheese, and you'll know they're good if they squeak when you bite them,
right?
And you batter them and deep fry them.
Yep. Oh wow!
And they
are
you
talking fried like that was good. You're talking the two.
Sounds like
two
Silence of the Lambs to me, Bob. You know,
fried and cheese.
Mm-hmm.
Don't tell your doctor.
Yeah, see if Dan Fisher ate any of those and his cardiologist found out about it, she'd look at him and say, I put that heart in your chest, I can take it back out.
I can take it out.
That's a great line.
I brought you into this world. I can and I can take you out. I mean.
Oh, okay. And thank you. Thank you. The Wisconsin contingent chimes in. Flavio's already disappeared on us, but Jenny wrote in. New Glarus. New Glarus Brewing. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Yes. Yes. And we can do. Yeah.
I mean, wouldn't it be awesome if we could have, like you said, a horn in or whatever, and everybody brought something, you know, that is, you know, it, you know, regional food, and just it would be hot and piping, like, you know, I bring the deep fried shrimp tacos, you know, the beer, the Kaneka sausage, and all that, and just
well,
have...
y'all make all that shit up and just send it to my house.
Hey, you and oh, John, you're the professional driver. You got to come to the Horn Inn too.
That's it. I'm just wondering, what is that Kaneka sausage? Is that, are you talking a link sausage or are you talking a patty sausage?
No, it's not a link like those crummy little Jimmy Dean things. It's a long link kind of. It's a long link smoked sausage in roughly the shape of a kielbasa.
Yeah.
But it's hickory smoked and it's unlike anything you've ever had. Let me check here. Hang on. C O N E C U H S A.
Don't look at the fat content. You don't.
No, for the love of God, don't.
No.
Shit,
no.
I don't look at the content of anything.
Okay, so I'm going.
The ingredients, Bob.
Just a shout out to your Australian crowd. My son's friends just came back from a trip over to Australia, and they brought back, of course, a bunch of stuff for us to try. Of course, Vegemite was in there.
Oh,
had
wow.
Some cookies called Tim Tams. They're pretty good. And this gum that is, I swear, this is Vicks VapoRub in a gum. I don't know what they're thinking about down there.
Oh, eucalyptus gum. Ooh. Yeah, okay.
No, it wasn't eucalyptus. It's Vicks VapoRub in a gum, I'm telling you.
Hey, Steve, you can get Kaneka at your Dahlonega Walmart and in Dawsonville.
I'll be damned. Okay. Maybe I can.
I'll have to look.
Now, I'm cruising down to Texas here online, mind you. Oh, shit, it's all...
You seen that up there in San Antonio?
It's all over the place, okay? It's all over Houston. All over the commissaries. Port Arthur. Port Neches. What's your nearest town? Corpus Christi, right?
Corpus Christi, right. That's where, yeah.
Let's see, I got Longview. Fiesta grocery stores.
Longview's about 8 hours from here.
Big damn state.
Maybe 7. I could make it in 7.
Well, Karen and my doctor are real whip slingers, so I may have to hide the fat content from them.
Well, do you
hurt them.
Hey, John, do you have anything from the Market Basket chain anywhere near you?
Nope, doesn't ring a bell.
We got
HEB.
Yeah, HEB doesn't carry it, and that surprises me because HEB is awesome.
Yeah, they carry a lot of stuff.
How far are you from Port Arthur?
Oh, let me see. Port Arthur's, that's probably about a six-hour drive from here.
Son of a gun.
Damn.
It's a long way anywhere. I lived out at the bottom near the coast, and
I figured with port in the name, it might be somewhere, you know, near the water.
It's 2 hours, I think, about a little less maybe from me to Dennis. He's up in San Antonio. I'm down in Corpus. It's about a 2 hour drive.
They're just a piece down the road.
Yeah, just a little. Yeah, that's not a. It may, hour.
Crystal
chopping.
Crystal Beach.
No wonder Duncan, all this food porn shit.
I know it, man.
I'm about ready to start chopping too.
Hey, Bob, I think I might
have for second dinner, right, Steve?
Kimba Hush.
I ain't had the first one yet, Rick.
Oh, okay.
Hush. He's looking at me like, whatever.
Hi, guys.
Hey.
Hey, Jan.
Can you all hear me?
Jan?
It's Megan.
Oh, hey, Megan.
Hey.
What's going on?
Well, you got in just in time for me to say goodnight.
Oh, thanks.
Bob,
Bob's leaving, but we're still here.
Yeah, the conversation.
We're glad you showed up to say goodbye.
The conversation will continue. just send Sparky a contact request on Skype, and you'll be right in the thick of things. But I've got to get this thing uploaded and everything.
Bob, how's your party fun? Are you nearly there?
Let's see.
Got to get you guys out of the house.
Oh, by the way, Robert in Australia. Hey, John, Robert in Australia says, go easy on the Vegemite. Very thin amounts on toast with melted butter.
No shit. No, I'm glad he said that. Are you shitting me? I wish he would have called in before I spread it like peanut butter. We'll just put you a big old boy out of your shit. Was that a mistake? That stuff's a bit salty. Yeah, yeah. It goes
thinner the better.
Vegemite. Sound like something from the I Love Lucy show, man.
Oh, man, I'm telling you. That's pretty stout. It's a bit salty. Thin is better.
Oh, and by the way, I can
you
happily...
Have heard of a Vegemite sandwich?
Yeah.
I can happily report that the beer case recipe is a rousing success. That stuff is getting funkier by the day. And I mean, it's good. It is good. Shredded medium, Tillamook medium cheddar, and Cabot Vermont extra sharp white cheddar. Why is the cheddar always got to be white, Bob? finally shredded with Worcestershire sauce, hot pepper, black pepper, beer, onions, and garlic. And just packed into a jar and let it go for a little while. And it's got attitude now. I want you to know.
Ooh, I like attitude.
Yeah, schmear a thin layer on some of that cocktail rye or just regular rye bread or whatever, and sit there and open up a frosty can of what the hell, and you got a snack. I mean it.
There you go, man. Boy, howdy.
Righteous. Well, you guys, you guys have a wonderful weekend. I'll either be here or maybe do a program and then me and Agnes go out because there'll still be 3 hours to, yeah.
So are you doing okay with that or?
Yeah, I think we're making real progress. And thank you very kindly.
Good.
Thank you very kindly. And thanks to.
Can we do another front porch for New Year's Eve before y'all go out and party, Bob?
You know, that might not be a terrible idea.
Maybe y'all, just a 2-hour program, Bob.
Y'all want to
so
do
you
a
get
new
out early.
Y'all want to do New Year's on the front porch?
Yes.
Eve.
Well, hold on, let me check my schedule. Oh yeah.
You good, John?
I ain't going nowhere, buddy. I'm right here.
I'm not going nowhere.
All right. Well, I'll tell you what. We'll do at least 2 hours of New Year's on the front eve. New Year's on the front porch.
New Year's Eve on the front.
Yeah,
you're talking 3 o'clock.
We'll see if we can go. No, we'll go out and see if we can get somebody to front us some New Year's Eve. no, we'll do New Year's Eve on the front porch, and then I'll see. Hopefully, the lovely Agnes will deign to let me squire her about a little bit later in the evening.
That would be.
Let me check. Let me check here.
Gonna squire her about.
You're gonna take pictures of that, Bob.
Fancy, Bob.
I never heard that verb, to squire. It sounds
squire
kind
about.
Of dangerous.
I said, will you? Okay, so I said, will you? I just asked her, will you let me squire you about on New Year's Eve? And my lovely wife responded, sure, Jethro.
Sure, Jethro, baby. Go ahead and pick up the horses. We'll go out, baby.
Hitch old Dobbin to the Shay. Damn skinny. All right, y'all. Hey, everybody, thanks so much for jumping in and joining in, and thanks for the al fresco impromptu send Bob and Agnes out campaign. Thank you very kindly, Steve and Rick, for getting that started. This has been, when isn't Friday on the front porch a delightful affair? But this is
baiting out here.
As Monique said, we are sending 2018 out in righteous fashion with this front porch. So thanks, everybody. Yeah. Have a great weekend. We will get together Monday evening, and then we'll see where the evening takes us. Thanks to all of you who keep the program on the air. Thanks to all of you who share your precious finite time engaged in this little running conversation. Thank you very kindly to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you, Steve and Rick and Tracy and Robert in Australia. Thank you so much this evening. And thanks to Sparky and Steve in the chat room. Thanks to Sparky in the at the head of the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, headon.live. Thank you to John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, whiteRoseSociety.org. And do remember, please, that the 8 campaign, a campaign of the of Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, we're trying to get things going to where we can do the work that'll go toward making getting the AIC Act passed in the coming House of Representatives. So that is all underway, and we'll talk more about that in the new year. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Have a great weekend, everybody. Later.